Kaufman. I'm sorry that we started the meeting 50 minutes late. But there were a few phone calls to say that we got stuck in traffic. And normally when it rains in the Western Cape, we're criticizing about the rain. No one has looked at this and criticized Western Cape about the rain. When it comes to the rain, it's normally the case. But anyhow, I'd like to welcome members present today. And the report back that we're receiving from the Department of Basic Education will be on teacher vacancies. And we see when it comes to the teacher vacancies itself, it has to be done with timelines for filling the posts. Remember, we were in four provinces. It was Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Northern Cape, and we went to Eastern Cape. And that was to look at school readiness in those provinces. And the report that we are receiving today is directly linked to our. The second presentation will be on outstanding textbooks and workbooks, including a progress report on provinces and districts when it comes to the enforcement of policy on textbook retrieval. Because remember, it's no use department deliver books, and they deliver books every year, and there's no retrieval policy in place. Because that's what we discovered when we were in with the textbook problems or challenges we had in Limpopo. And that was part of our explanations too, that there should be a retrieval policy in place. With those few words, I won't just give over to the department. I'd like to ask Alan just to read the apology, please.
We have received apology from both the Office of the Minister and the DG.
Thanks. Will you please note that? And I received a phone call from our, the Honourable Dina. She's still stuck in traffic, but she is on her way. But she'll be fine. She will be fine. Busy with her two reports that's in front of us. And today I would like to welcome a new member, the Honourable J.B. Nakubendi. Omakubeni Maluleka, Honourable. She is the new member within our committee. And we would like to welcome her. And she is also a teacher by profession. So this committee, Honourable members, we have principal. We have lecturers, one lecturer, yes, it's about three principals, we have, and then teachers, but the teachers are all at different levels. And we have an EDO, and as usual, I mustn't forget we have a minor too, not a child, a minor, that comes from the mind, the past depressants. But according to things and how about him, he does have, you know, he studied further, he do have degrees, and then at the same time, he worked on education too while he was in the mines. You don't want to speak about their degrees. Because that's how we start lying, then I give myself a doctorate. And the famous sign I've known, and this woman don't have a doctorate in public administration, it's below the doctorate. So let us not be alive and claim easy victories. But perhaps I claim easy victories for you too. No, we don't lie. We have, we are politicians. Yes. Yes, honorable member. Honorable member. You know, I'm not going to speak about that. I am not going to speak about that. Because it's 1, 2, 3, 4 now from Limpopo. No, honorable member, the Limpopo number has increased. And I am a bit worried. And it's not even 4. We have 5 from Limpopo. Now she's not additional. She's not additional. She is replacing, I think, the honorable Kosana because he's so off environment. Yes, I was there. And at the same time, I would like to welcome our into the meeting too. Huh? Who? Who is it? Huh? Oh, so well. Now I understand she's a NUMSA member. Yes, by association, yes. And listen here. I'd like to speak to the Honorable Mponshana, and the Honorable Dina Biaifis, because two of you are sitting next to each other today. We're not going to speak about the kingdom at all. We're not going to speak about the salvation to NUMSA. We're not going to speak about the meeting taking place today, you know, in Johannesburg. We're going to concentrate on education. Thanks. Comrades, that's the way we start our meeting. Everyone wants to say something for us, all teachers. Our voices must be heard. And you're going to notice through this committee, when it comes to asking the department questions, everyone's in here. Everyone is going to ask the department. And you have to put a limit with the questions too. Because sometimes you want to ask 5 questions, some want to ask 10. So, you know, you just say 2 or 3. Thanks a lot. Is there any apologies on the department? Because we have the ministry's apologies. Ms. Mwili? Fine. Thanks. It is. Certainly, I don't mind that. We'll start with the person that's leading the delegation. Let me know exactly who is the leader of this delegation. Thank you. May I start? You don't have your mic on, sir.
Madam Zimamuli, it's my name, FNDDG for Curriculum DE.
Thanks a lot. Second in charge?
My name is Temba Botana. I'm acting DDG, responsible for the Disaster Branch, DPE.
Fine. Now, according to protocol, who is the next person? Fine. I'm Simone Gaya. I am Chief Director for Education and Human Resource Management in the branch teachers. Thank you.
I'm Subin, Director, Enhancement of Programs and School Performance in the branch curriculum.
Thanks. The other departmental official.
I'm Kodola Manona. I'm the Chief Education Specialist for MTSM.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Ulwan Mahadalia. I'm the teacher's coach. Thank you.
Fine. And I'm the Chairperson of the Committee on Basic Education. And then I would like, we start with Honorable Kina. Can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, Chairperson and everyone. I know Marumilo Gina, coming from KwaZulu-Natal. I'm the member of this committee.
Good.
Mr. President, my name is Aaron Ponchani, member of this committee coming from KwaZulu-Natal. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Annette Lovemore. I'm from the Eastern Cape and a member of this committee.
That's under administration. Good.
Good morning. My name is Donald Smiles from the Eastern Cape, a member of this committee.
Good. Thank you, Jefferson. Megima Hishi, member of the committee coming from Mbubu. Fine. Honorable Moni.
My name is Cross Dimoni, a member of the committee, an adult South African.
Another vibe.
Morning, Jefferson, and morning, all. My name is Tracy Gubeni Maluleka. I'm coming from Mpumalanga, not from Limpopo.
Yes, South Minor, one again for Limpopo. We can go over to our show.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Dennis Gandhi, Content Advisor for the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you.
Hi. Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Javlan Bob, Research of the Portfolio Committee.
Hello, Wayne.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Luan Brown, Committee Secretary for the Portfolio Committee.
I think if I look at the people present here today, we'll start. Oh, yes, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is
Mugabila
Khanyabo. I'm also a member of the Portfolio Committee.
I'm really very grateful to have you. Thank you. But I would like to disappoint you, the members from Mpumalanga. She said she's not from Mpumalanga. We'll start with those in here. We'll start here with you, ma'am. Switch on the mic.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honorable. In this topic, it's my name, a researcher for Select Committee Education and Education. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to everyone. My name is Temam Detwa, a content advisor for the Select Committee in Education and Recreation.
Thank you. Let's start. Ma'am, you?
Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Vanelle Kato from the Auditor General.
Come in. Our IG's office. Good.
Good morning, Anthony from BMT.
Sasha Alkari from Parliament Communications.
Next to you.
Good morning, Michelle O'Connor from Media 24.
Good morning, members, and the Santa Bene Committee Assistant for the Portfolio Committee.
Just the mic. On the side,
Raina is from the EWN.
Somewhere?
I was asleep.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Tim Pobo from the Equal Education Law Center.
Good.
Good morning, I'm Hope Lansing from Equal Education.
Good.
I'm Michelle Jones from the Cape Times.
Thanks a lot for that. So we know exactly who's in the meeting and the newspapers that are here today. And welcome to you all. I'll hand over to Mr. Whaley and then we'll listen to you because you're speaking to the textbooks. Am I correct? Or the workbooks? What are you doing?
Thank you, Chair. I thought that in terms of the order of the program, we start with the teacher issues and then after that the textbooks.
Fine.
But whichever way you direct, we can.
Mm. I thought I wanted to start with you, but if you feel we should go strictly according to agenda, we'll start with our vacancies. That's why I asked you whether you were ready when you came in. But it's okay, let us start with the vacancies. Ms. Kunjana. It will both be the presentation we received. And I must say that we received the presentation only this morning, but at least we have about 15 minutes to go through it. Thank you. Mm. Yes.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah? It really isn't acceptable. It really
isn't. I'm not sure to come in.
I know, but I'm asking you to ask the delegation.
Please, I didn't ask you to come in because I already said it came late. And I think that is enough. Thank you. Don't look at each other, please. Department just go on.
Let me start by apologizing with regards to this matter because we know that we have sent it to yesterday. But we'll just investigate as to why members have received it only this morning, but we have sent the presentation yesterday.
Don't worry, I'll check on that one, thank you. May I continue, sir?
Miguel will be doing the presentation. Over to you.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We today are taking a broad overview of what's happening around teacher vacancies. The starting point is that we just introduced how we would cover these aspects. We have put in place an education human resource planning framework. We'll talk to its purpose and objective. Then we look at the trends in education and we will be showing you some data in respect to what the trends are saying. And then we look at the process of filling our posts, and in that respect we will then talk to the vacancies. Now, the purpose of the framework is to guide the development and management of policy for the provisioning, utilization and employment conditions of teachers and support staff. The aim is to guide the efforts to provide the right quality and quantity of teachers and support staff with the right qualifications and competencies in the right positions at the right time. So the three keys of the right teacher in the right place at the right time is the focus of this planning framework. And the idea is then to look at how you plan correctly to have the right teacher in the right place at the right time with the right qualifications. Planning should happen long term. The aim of introducing our planning framework is then to plan long term with 5 years in mind. We have the action plan 2014, but we also have schooling towards 2025. So the idea is that for the next 5 years, starting from next year, we'll put in place a 5-year plan, which will guide us around HR matters. And if you look at the real long-term plan, it will take you right until 2025, in line with schooling 2025. The objective of the framework is to enable the education departments to meet the teacher and support staff human resource needs resulting from the strategic plan. Human resource planning is essential in order to ensure that the organization's human resources are capable of meeting operational objectives. So what we found in the past is that the staff plans, especially in relation to HR, are not aligned in the provinces to a national plan. And so this is trying to introduce that kind of uniformity where everything talks to our action plan and we understand exactly what is happening in the provinces around planning. The trends are important to understand and we just introduced the slide to indicate that they monitor and inform and help planning. The trends up until 2011 are available and data for 2012 is currently being analyzed and will be ready by July 2013. And the trends show whether or not perceptions of the public on the provisions of teachers to schools are true or not. So it will tell you, you know, indicators and whether what many people say, especially around an exodus of teachers, if that is correct or not. The demands for teachers, well, teachers in the system come as a result of both a growth in enrollment and the need to replace teachers who terminate from the service. So that's the main area where you have a demand. Growth demand normally results from various factors, which includes growth of enrollment due to population growth, or higher repetition rates, or policy changes such as lowering of the learner-teacher ratio, or the lowering of class sizes, or the promotion of access to sections of the population which were previously not part of an education system. So all of these things will then create a particular demand for teachers. It will add be that you need a lot more teachers, especially around lowering of learner-teacher ratios and lowering of class sizes.
Replacement demand results from the loss of teachers or attrition due to various causes. The main causes of attrition include resignation, death or mortality, discharge due to ill health and retirement. Each cause requires careful analysis and may require specific policy responses. For instance, high levels of resignation may point to problems in retention, whilst discharge due to ill health may point to a general societal problem or a lack of effective wellness program. On attrition, we have a very stable attrition. We have shown you a slide here which indicates that the average attrition rate is around about 3.5%, which is approximately 13,000 educators annually over a period from 2007-08 to 2011-12. So within those financial years, you can see that the attrition rate has remained stable. And we're also saying that it is, if you look at studies that have been done by UNESCO and the OECD, you'll find that our teacher attrition rate is within the range of the other countries. Okay, their indications are actually a little bit higher than where we are on attrition. There is ranging between 5% and 30%, and it comes from the Hunter study of 2005. On teacher supply, there are two important factors that we need to look at here, and mainly it's ensuring adequate supply of teachers with required skills and competencies at all times, and we need to ensure the optimal utilization in an effective and efficient manner. Here we're showing you a slide that is an age distribution, and you'll see that our age distribution peaks between the ages of 30 and 59. And our biggest numbers are within the age of 40 to 49. So basically what the slide is telling you is that we have an aging teaching corps, and that they are fairly stable in the system. They are not leaving. But at some point, if we don't put in place the correct plans around ensuring that we get a younger generation in, at some point down the line, in the next 15 to 20 years, we'll have a vast exodus of teachers. So it needs to. We need to put in place very clear recruitment strategies and basic programs to get teachers in. Yeah, I've spoken to the age distribution slide. The qualifications profile. What this shows is that over a period of time we've stabilized, and that most of our teachers are at RQV 13 and 14. That's where our highest numbers are, and that is reflected right up until 2011. The provincial disaggregation shows on the qualification profile, it shows that 85% of all RQV 10 educators are in KwaZulu-Natal. There are particular reasons why that is so. Employment of unqualified teachers in high numbers could put to a hidden shortage. And that's not a shortage of, necessarily a hidden shortage of teachers, but a hidden shortage of teachers who are prepared to go and teach in rural areas. And then future reports will look deeper into the analysis of these aspects, which will include factors such as subjects that they are teaching, the school level of phase, and the geographical areas. The reason why KZN has this high percentage of unqualified teachers is because they also are the biggest area with the most rural of schools, and it is difficult to find teachers who are prepared to go into these areas where you cannot get such a teacher, and there is an unqualified teacher who is willing to teach. That's what the province then does to assist them. The summary of the profile of teachers in the qualifications is shown on this slide, and you'll see that it stables out in RQV 30 and RQV 14, which is the requirement to be qualified as a teacher currently. And that's where the greater percentage of teachers sit. Around appointment of temporary teachers, this slide shows you per province. What is maybe worrying about this is that the number of temporary teachers has increased over the years. What should roughly happen is, if you say your attrition rate is stable at 3% or 3.5%, then that should be the amount of teachers that you have in a percentage as temporary teachers. But what we find is that we have 11% of temporary teachers and 3% of attrition rate. So there's a disjuncture between the two. And the reasons for that are twofold. One, is that there are certain steps we have to follow in education around the filling of posts. We still have problems of excess teachers because of how the post provisioning happens on an annual basis. And this creates excess teachers in the country. Where the excess teachers are located or not where the posts are located, they are often in very rural areas and excess teachers are in urban areas. So if you cannot allow for the immediate movement of an excess teacher, we then appoint a temporary teacher in a rural area in a temporary capacity until such time as we're able to transfer an excess teacher who's willing to go work in the area. So that is the main reason, and once again you'll see the KZN has the highest numbers of temporary teachers. And the side actually speak to each other, the data speak to each other around rural, the nature of rural province and, you know, what some of the challenges are that they experience. I've spoken to that one. Now, as soon as I graduate, these are the teachers who get bursaries and they have to be placed into vacancies. And so this shows you the placement well, we're taking it from January. And up until March, it is at 66%, and this is for the graduates who came out of the university last year and have to be placed this year. Now, when we talk about vacancies, all of these factors, you know, they go together. You can't see one in isolation of the other. A vacancy, these students are graduates have to go into vacancies. We've got a place in, it's part of our contractual responsibilities. And so it's an ongoing process, and you'll see that offsets the vacancies. So when you read the number of vacancies, you've got to take out the Kunza graduates who have been placed. You also got to take out the number of excess teachers there are. And those things then help to bring down the number of real vacancies. And of course, in education, when we talk of vacancy, although it is a vacancy that shows on system, in reality, in the class, it's not a vacancy because we put temporary teacher in place until such time as a teacher can be appointed permanently. So in real terms, when we talk about what is happening in the schooling system, a vacancy doesn't translate to a class without a teacher. And that's sometimes often misunderstood in education. But currently, all schools, all classes have teachers in front of them in relation to the vacancies that we have in the system, because it is a funded vacancy and therefore we put in a temporary teacher to fill that post until such time as the post is called permanently. This just shows you the slide of the Kunza graduates per year, and you'll see that last year we achieved 91% of placement. The reason why it's at 91% and not 100% is because there were problems in the Eastern Cape and we couldn't place the Eastern Cape teachers. They have a lot of excess teachers that the rules say you both have to accommodate permanent teachers and place them before you can deal with anyone else. In terms of the LRA, an employer has a responsibility to your permanent employees first. That's captured in our Employment of Educators Act as well. We have a responsibility first to place permanent teachers. And because the Eastern Cape had severe problems around us and they did not place all the excess teachers, we had difficulties with the Funza Lushaka buses. And what we have managed to do is that in a province like KZN, who has a dire need for teachers, we have managed to go to these teachers, these new graduates, and ask them if they would reconsider where they have applied for a post. If you have applied in the Eastern Cape, we will ask if you would consider to go to the KZN, and they have considered, and so it has eased the problem in terms of placement around who should have gone to Eastern Cape. So our problems around that is getting better. And then in the Funza graduates for this year, we've spoken to the 66%, which is added at March. It's an ongoing process, and so the number, you know, as you read it on the per class system, it would be far different from where we are now at the 66% reflection as at March. This slide is trying to attempt to show you some of what we mean when we talk about vacancies. So, for instance, in Free State, there are 812 vacancies, and we've already placed in March 1956 Funza graduates. If you go and see the data of what the excess teachers are showing, it would eat into the 812 a little bit more. and then the net vacancies would be far fewer than the reflected 812. And of course, what we have to bear in mind is that even though the show is 812 vacancies, if you go into three states, you are not going to find that vacancy translates to no teacher in the classroom. There is a temporary teacher appointed because these posts are all funded vacancies. So there are no classes without teachers in the case of a funded vacancy. On foreign teachers, this is our strategy to try and assist the system where we have scarcity of teachers, for instance, in maths and science and technology. We have agreements with countries, neighboring countries like Zimbabwe, or any other country who's willing to send us teachers. Often it is also just on a voluntary basis that Zimbabwean teachers come into our country looking for a job. If they have the skills that address scarce skills, we do offer opportunity for them to find employment in a temporary capacity, and this reflects on the percentages of province of how many foreign teachers we have. The idea is that they get employed for a short-term period whilst our teachers are in university to complete their degrees. The moment we have a Funda Lushaka graduate or a provincial department bursary, some of the provincial departments also offer bursaries. Also the EDPC offers bursaries for teachers. So as soon as we have a teacher who's fully qualified from a university, we'll replace one of these foreign teachers. And so that's how the number of foreign teachers eventually will narrow down, and we will be able to meet the needs of the country. The process of filling our vacant posts, I have spoken a lot about it, but I'll just go through these slides. Post provisioning is declared in September each academic year. Educators, including deputy principals, heads of departments, are identified in schools that they have excesses of posts, and then the provincial department has to fill these vacancies. They have to fill them first by considering the excess teachers. Thereafter, they look at the Funda Lushaka graduates, and then they get into any other remaining vacancies, and they see how best to utilize the filling of posts. If you were a temporary teacher in the system, you know, after we look at excess teachers and Funda Lushaka graduates, we then look at how can we place a temporary teacher who is fully qualified in the system, and we use Section 68A of the Employment of Educators Act to convert temporary appointment to a permanent appointment. That then reduces this thing about putting adverse for vacancies. So all of these things are mechanisms in place to eat into that previous slide I showed you with the vacancy numbers, and you don't have to fill the post through a bulletin, an advert. You know, these are mechanisms in the system that just allow for our transfer, and only when we get to the point where we cover all of those, because that facilitates a quicker process, then do we add the time. So you'll find that adverts in the provinces only come out twice in a year, and roughly they come out in about May, and then again about September of each year. The vacancy list for entry-level teachers are therefore scarce since the amount of this can be exhausted. So you can have a situation where we're only advertising heads of department and deputy principals, and in the event the principal leaves or retires, or it will be a principal post, and you can have in some provinces that there is no possible one post that requires to be advertised because the process I've explained to you has already exhausted and filled the post. And we believe that through proper planning in HR, in an ideal world, what we should be striving towards, and that's why we put in place HR framework, is that we want to be able to plan, for instance, we always say there are only two instances we can't plan for, and that is death and resignation. We cannot, you know, preempt when you're going to die and when you're going to resign. But what we can do is we can read in the system long before the time at what point you will retire. So, for instance, if we know a principal is going to be retiring in September of this year, we can fill that post, advertise it, and fill it already from January or from the second term, which is March. You can start that process so that by the time the principal does exit the system, you already have a new principal to take over the permanent post and not put in place an acting principal before you get into. So that's what we are working towards. And the same can go for teachers who are retiring at post level one. If you plan correctly in the system, you will be able to see, firstly, what would be the shortages, because it's going to tell you in the profile of the teacher 5 years from now, so many math teachers or so many physics teachers or accounting, you know, whatever the profile, it can tell you now already that in 5 years' time, this is how many of this kind of a teacher you will be losing. They will give us the indication in the supply of teachers whom we have to provide. It reflects in that you have to train this kind of teacher. Currently, we have our priority areas of what we have to train, which is math, science, technology, and so on. But we can also read into the system through the data that is available what are other areas which may be a common area. But because we've got an aging teaching population that is sitting between the age of 40 and 49, if most of them are, say, for instance, foundation phase and intermediate phase primary school teachers that will be leaving the system in the next 15 years, it shows us that we need to get more bursaries out in that area as well as our unidentified skill subjects. So it's very useful to do this kind of planning, and we believe that this is what will help us to correct many of the problems in HR in particular in the system. And that's the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Ms. Kaya. Any additions, sir?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. To support the framework, we have developed a strategy that talks to two processes. One around building stability in the system in terms of the declaration of post-provisioning. We've learned examples from KwaZulu-Natal as well as Limpopo. You recall that one of the key issues around Limpopo was around HR matters. We can report today to this committee that those matters have been dealt with. There were more than 2,400 excess educators that needed to be placed. Last week, we got the report that the number of those teachers that needed to access to the system was 68. Because what we did was that we had a collective agreement that really dealt with the declaration of post over a period of 2 years. Now, it's only now, this coming year, that the MEC will declare the post-processing for the province of Limpopo. This has been the practice in KwaZulu-Natal. That's why there's stability. So the strategy there starts to talk about that provinces can choose in which range that they link to the declared establishment. Like your Gauteng and Western Cape, they would rather declare their post-establishment on an annual basis because of the pressure points. Because we want to deal with these issues of proper management of redeployment and the placement of educators. The same part talks to the strategies that we spoke about earlier around the replacement of Funza Shack. That there should be fit rigorous, because a lot of investment there, that there should be fit rigorous attempt to ensure that you place Funza Shack Bezaris. That's why we are reporting today that from January up until March, we're at 6% in terms of replacement already, which is a huge step in the right direction. Above that, we also have developed a strategy to recruit prospective teachers from the rural areas. You know, that seems to be working quite very well. We also distributed this information booklet, which is a guide for food and so that when people are applying, I mean, honorable members, whenever they do their work, they're able to have a guide that they can be able to speak to in speaking to their respective constituencies. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for this presentation. I'll ask the committee members, you know, just to indicate, you know, who would like to question this report. I'll start with the Honourable Gina. I think I'll, as we go along, we start with Honourable Gina, we stop with Honourable Mashishi, then we go over to Honourable Mani, the two at back. Let's start Honourable Gina.
Thank you very much, President. I've got a few and very short.
How many are a few?
Four.
How many?
There are five chapters and very few.
Short.
Very short.
I think people are agreeing, so no stop on five.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. The first thing, Chairperson, for me,
I'm interested in that slide that two slides there to present the one with foreign educators.
Yeah.
This survey that relied on the placement of students who have graduates. If ever we can look at those slides, Chairperson, because what interests me, the Chairperson, it's a pity that the presentation we have is not numbered, but the slide on Funza Vishaga graduate and also the slide on the foreign educators. I'll make an example, Chairperson. I'll just take, maybe I should have taken another one, but let me take Western Cape on the foreign educators. The percentage there, Chairperson, standard. Foreign was 16%, and you look at the placement of Funza Vishaga, it's 48%. We have got a lot of them that are not placed in the province, and with all other provinces, we still have some that are not placed. The question then for me, Chairperson, is to say, I was happy because towards the end of the presentation there was this issue of prioritizing how the teachers are being trained and also where the need is. But for me, that picture indicates that we it's a lot of investment, as we are saying, but it somehow indicates that we invest where we are not supposed to be investing. We send them to those, we give them food and other bazaars, but they're not assisting the system. Hence, we have got so much number of teachers that cannot be placed or unplaced. We still need to go out to other countries to have visitors coming in to other countries. But we are proud to say we are investing in the training of teachers. Are we really investing? Or we are utilizing the funds, but it's not to where the country needs those teachers. With all the provinces, but it was alarming looking at the Western Cape. I think that percentage is too huge. If we are going to say we have foreign educators at the present age, why do we have teachers within the country that are not placed? And even this movement of them, today we have taken others maybe from the Eastern Cape where the placements have not been made to KZN, whereas we find that we still a lot within even that province. But I think somewhere, somehow, we still need to manage that well. And in the future, I don't start to think such a picture is going to be portrayed. Secondly, Chairperson, my question is, how long did a teacher who has been declared surplus remain in that position or in that school without a movement of that teacher? I'm not sure whether I'm clear, because if ever in school A, a teacher, Mr. Mbojana, a teacher is declared in surplus, but we'll find Mr. Mbojana staying in that school for more than 5 years, definitely there will be another. He needs to, I don't know, I'm taking the arguments that are there with the unions and whatever to say, when do you move them? Because if ever we cannot manage this, we'll always be stuck in this thing of teachers, in temporal teachers, because we know teachers do not want to move. How are we, what is the plan to make sure that there is that easy movement? One, the teacher is declared surplus so that he can go and fill the post where he is needed most. The third one, Chairperson, what are the plans of making sure that, okay, when you look at teacher supply, you talk of two important factors. That is the adequate supply with the required skill and ensuring the optimal utilization and efficient manner. For me, that one is very correct and very interesting, but you know we are our witnesses who are faced the problem. How are we going to make sure that a teacher is maximally utilized to where he or she is trained, to what he or she is trained for? In the system, really, we still have lots of teachers. I'm a living example of that. I had a secondary teacher's qualification, but most of my life I spent in the primary school, where, for me, I was not utilized optimally and efficiently. How many teachers we have with the primary education, but in the start today, we're always going to complain of short of skills, but if ever we can have a plan of making sure that a teacher is placed where he needs to perform well, I don't think, what plans do we have to make sure that we correct that situation? There, we have got teachers, even matriculants, who will tell you that I was given in life science, but I've never studied life science, I've never even studied, but just because we need to have a teacher in front of a learner, of which does not help us, nothing, but okay, maybe you have a plan as to how are you going to correct such a thing. Lastly, Chairperson,
do we have a picture as to say how much teachers, how many teachers we need in the system? Yes, I know we have been talking, but if we can just ask you, as we are sitting there in the HR, what are the needs that you have in the country? How much teachers do we need? The needs of such skills, math and science, what are the plans? How much we can say really this is the shortfall that we have in the system? If ever there is that information, I can get to get it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I get inspirational as five. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you for the presentation. Let me just make a general statement, which is this. Training of tutors is outside the competence of the Department of Basic Education. It's the higher education competence. I think that is my statement is correct. You only received the finished product. Yet, in your framework, your intentions, your objectives to produce quality teachers. That's a statement, your intention. With somebody else, you must implement that is higher education. That's a problem. Because, Chairperson, I want to argue that the statement who says that no system can be better than its teachers is very true. Now, we have just looked at our budget recently, which is comparatively very good. But our teachers or our children continue to be badly taught. And the cause can be pointed to the quality of our teachers. Now, having said that, the bulk of our teachers, especially in the primary school, where the teachers who started off as unqualified teachers and they improved their qualification through correspondence like these certain colleges and other colleges by themselves. Nobody was teaching them and math, the theory and other and philosophical foundations, and they lack in those skills. And even to go back a little, even when OPE was introduced, the main problem was the training of our teachers. You take them through 2 weeks, that's a disaster, you know. Now, my question, are you, as Department of Basic Education, going to suggest somewhere to the Department of Higher Education to stop this method of training our teachers through correspondence? The initial training, that's good for postgraduate. You go to institutions like UNESA, those who have received funds are Lushaka Pesaris. They are at University of South Africa. In their numbers, they've never seen a lecturer or a teacher straight from the tree. They start on their own. They will occasionally visit some schools for whatever, I don't know. But do you think those teachers get quality training? I doubt. Is it in your thinking to suggest that such initial training of teachers not be done through correspondence as it is happening now? And I don't think that is assisting us in producing quality teachers. That's the question. And lastly, Chair, if you look at the graduates, I would have liked to have the concrete numbers, for instance, you look at Funda Lushaka graduates. How many of these graduates, what is their qualification, their quality, and, especially in these skills, Because I tell you, most of them, you go there, they will be trained in the ordinary subjects. I'm not saying those are not good, but you know, in SCAS girls, how many of those? Perhaps I'm top of the chair for other girls.
Chairperson, my first question is about colleges of education. I think in the past we used to have colleges of education. Well, if I say in the past, please don't mix this with the issue of apartheid education. I'm just talking about the past, where we had colleges of education all over the country and were producing sufficient numbers of teachers for our schools. A three-year course, so on and so on. But I see here, I've just gone through this quickly. I see here you have people who take a B.Ed. degree or a degree followed by a postgraduate diploma. To me, it sounds very, very, very educated. They're too high. I mean, according to me, for primary schools, I thought the colleges were okay to lay the foundation there. Now the B.S. and the three-year, one-year postgraduate, well, it could be used in matric and so on. To, you know, there is a link, you know, from matric to university, very close. But if you take a person with a B.S. degree to a primary school to teach 1+1=2 and so on, it's a pity. One would want to see how they do it. It looks a little boring and so on. But let that be as it is. My question is, does the department think of going back, not really to the apartheid thing, but going back to the training of teachers in colleges, not universities? The second one about the very people who get their qualifications through this, what do you call, Funza Lushaka bursaries. What do you do with the trained teachers who are choosing? Because I've seen something in this booklet that after completion, placement is made by the department. Unless I have not seen that sentence very well. My spectacles sometimes mislead me. But it sounds like you place these people. In other words, you can have a young man from Mariloi placed somewhere in, not happen, it's still the same. You place him in Bochum. You know, far-flung rural areas, because this is the real problem. The question of far-flung, I don't know far-flung from where, because if you are there, you will also see a serious far-flung. Now, but now, normally, the meaning is negative. Far-flung means rural. Now, you have people who do not want to go to rural schools, and it is happening even now. You know, in the past, they used to have what you call teachers' quarters. They are not used anymore. They would rather pay money to travel from urban areas to those schools because they can't get posts, but they always struggle to go back to, urban areas. Now, the question is, what does the department do if you find, we'll say he's choosing because when he entered into the contract, he knew that he would be placed by the department. But when he completes, he becomes choosing now. And he says, no. I want to go and teach in Durban, as he has indicated. So if there are ways in which you can make the people maybe make it attractive for them. Actually, I personally would say even in this Shaka Lusaka battery, add some little salt there, I don't know what type of salt. Funza is for education. Lusaka? You see the bank. Funda Lushaka, Lushaka, maybe you must fill up the bank. Okay. I'll call it LF. I'll call it LF. I'm sorry, FL. Funda and then L. FLB. Yeah, I'm going to call it LLB. The FLB t-shirts. Now, can you add something here when you place them? That would really make it very, very attractive for them to want to go and teach where you want them to go and teach. I don't know what type of thing you can do there, because obviously the rural areas are full of cattle and so on, sheep and goats. Maybe you can promise them something along those lines. The other one is really, really a sore, really, on my heart. Yes. I believe there should be a remedial teacher in every school. One. Because we are just where learners experience problems, you know, during this foundation thing. And, you know, this thing of a condoning, to condone is not to correct. You are worsening issues there. Now, I just want to know if the department considers, because when you speak of a teacher training, I never hear about the training of qualified teachers to be remedial teachers, or even a new course where a person specializes from the very onset. I want to be a remedial teacher. I want to deal with this type of children. And then he goes to the university, if it is a university or a college, or a teacher who has experience, which is rather a better system to take teachers who are already qualified to go and take a course in remedial education. They understand the things in the school, the problems in the schools. So I never hear anything about this remedial teacher. You know, these are just the same as the guidance teachers. Now, those are the things that I think, some are questions that you perhaps may answer, but some are things that you may start thinking about. Guidance teachers, remedial teachers. I don't know how you would deal with this, but I think they're very, very important, and we need to address this, of course. The last one is the college here. I don't know how many questions I have asked. Maybe I've asked one in many ways. I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I know my questions will be similar to those of my colleagues, and some of them are slightly tangential to the core substance of the presentation, but they all link in to exactly what you hope to achieve, and that is to, as you've put it, guide efforts to provide the right quality and quantity of teachers and support staff. And so I want to link to what my colleagues have said about quality of teachers, and specifically what Helen Ziller recently called the elephant in the room with respect to education, and that is the LEADER report, where Dr. Nick Paylor has reported that the majority, or many, let me not say the majority because I don't think he gives a number, but many of the foundation phase teachers do not have the subject knowledge to teach and cannot impart what they do know to their learners. So that is not quality. My question, I don't want to delve into that too much because I realize it's a different subject, but my question is, with your planning for teachers, how does that sort of report inform what you do? And it ties in very much with what the Honorable Mutana was saying with respect to your interaction with higher education and the training that they are giving to our teachers, which it seems from Dr. Nick Taylor's work is not resulting in quality teachers. Chairperson, the bottom line question that I have, and I'm not convinced there is an answer of yes to, but if I ask you, do you know at this stage exactly how many maths teachers we have in the Eastern Cape, or the Northwest, for that matter, it's huge Northwest, and none of us are from there, how many maths teachers we need in the Northwest, how many maths teachers are currently training and will go to Northwest, how many maths teachers we will need in 5 years' time in Northwest. My concern arises
from many things. But let me just give you one example. In the MEC Makapula, the MEC of Education in Eastern Cape, in his speech, in budget speech in March of this year, he indicated the number of vacancies, teacher vacancies in Eastern Cape, to be 8,800. The report we have before us says vacancies as of the 28th of February in the Eastern Cape, 5,454. So the number is 3,000 different. It is very, very different. So my question, I think it's underpinned by figures that don't tie up. I'll give you one example. And I would like to know, do you know how many teachers we have or need per phase, per subject, per area, based on a properly calculated learner-teacher ratio? Slide 5 speaks to trends. It says trends are monitored to help inform planning. Trends up until 2011 are available, etc., etc. Trends will show whether or not perceptions of the public on the provision of teachers to schools are true or not. Quite frankly, I don't care whether the perceptions are true or not. I don't care. All that I care about is whether every child has the right teacher in front of him or her at all times, in a class that is of a size that is acceptable, not like some of the Transkei classes we found 173. So when you talk about these trends are monitored, trends are available, trends are you're analyzing data, what trends are you actually preparing or have you actually got that you haven't shared with us today? That's three questions. Chair. Yes, well, the variances are on slide 5. That's the trends on slide 5. No, that was just... No, that's not. It's underpinning... Chair, it's underpinning a question. Chair, I will go to Funda Shaka, which is, I don't always guys a number, but it's slide number 17. And I really want to put it to you that you have a lot of work to do here. This system is not working. Bottom line, Funda Shaka system is not working. And I want, I'd just like you to expand perhaps, and perhaps you could just tell us how you see it is working. If you say not yet placed, now we are in May. We are close to the end of May. Anybody who is not placed at the end of March has no contractual obligation to the department whatsoever. If they are not placed within 3 months of graduating, they have no contractual obligation to the department whatsoever. They fall away according to the contract. So you might well say we have lost 1,027. If you take those people out, if you take into account the fact that in 2009, assuming that these people have taken 4 years to do a degree, in 2009 you allocated 9,141 Funda Shaka bursaries. And you now have available for placements, let's put it that way, 3,050. That is a 22% success rate. 22%. Which is atrocious. It's absolutely atrocious. This is not a return on investment. It's not an answer to the shortage of teachers, and that chair goes back. So I'd like just for you to expand a little bit on Funda Shaka and why you think it is working, and if it's not working, which certainly seems to be the case, what do you plan to do to make it work? But chair, go back to my first question. Do you actually know how many teachers we need? I mean, when it comes to planning for Funda Shaka, I'm not convinced that you do. Chair, I'm convinced I've asked four questions.
No, five. Honourable, it's five questions. I gave you five questions. Honourable, don't sound like a naughty child, man. Smile.
Thank
you. I'm so smiley to you, but I just couldn't get your name.
Chairperson, I just want to start with slide 2. It's not a question, just, you know, quote, human resource planning is essential in order to ensure that an organization's human resources are capable of meeting its operational objectives. We know what is the state of operational objectives, meeting those objectives when it comes to education. South Africa is not happy, right? We are not meeting curriculum delivery in the classroom. Now, filling a vacant post, then you would have improved on your ability to deliver the curriculum. That is a point that I want to make. Now, having said that, Chairperson, I want to know from DBE, as a coordinating body, as a monitoring body for the BEDs, what is the strategic direction that you give them with regard to filling of vacant posts? I haven't heard anything that excites me to say DBE is in control as a coordinating body to make sure that the provincial departments do take care of the filling of vacancies as they should. Chairperson, so I would like to hear what is the maybe only one important strategic line that goes to provinces from DBE. Chairperson, then temporary teachers. I think there is also an indication that the Department of Basic Education indicates that with regard to temporary teachers, they know the attrition rate is at 3.4 and the average temporary teachers is at 11. So at least there is a, simplistically, there is a sort of a calculation that you know that you can count on, or an estimate, if I'm able to put it that way. So why don't you budget for that estimate? Because I don't see budget in this presentation. But because that is the problem. That is the problem. You don't appoint a temporary teachers in many cases because you don't have the budget. Let me give you an example. In Transvaal, a primary school in Lady Grant in Stelspruit, and in Bartley East, in Fairview, also in Stelspruit, in the first school, two teachers, 238 learners. The others left because they have not been paid, and the reason there's no budget, and then other teachers need to be placed in the Eastern Cape. So there's a crisis at that school. The same applies to Bartley East Primary School. Then, Chairperson, coming to a budget, and maybe this you can rule it out of order. Go to UE, right? Teachers cannot be appointed, or the vacancies cannot be appointed because the infrastructure do not have enough classrooms. 2,000 learners, dilapidated school. They cannot appoint more teachers. There's no classrooms for them. So that is a problem, and it's a budget problem and an infrastructure problem. So, Chairperson, when we speak temporary teachers, we don't have to look at the numbers only. We need to look at the budget because that is the obstacle. Then lastly, Chairperson, some of the things are very simple that need to be done. I've looked at the frame of vacancies and the processes that need to be followed. I haven't seen bulletins yet. I mean, ordinary teachers' bulletins that must go out at a certain time. To make sure that that simple way of filling vacancies are being done. Because this is where provinces are failing, especially the Eastern Cape. So, Chairperson, I would like to know what was the department doing about, making sure that the provincial departments issue bulletins regularly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague asked so many questions that I wanted to ask. But I just want to add on this one of the lecturer graduates, that for those who said they are not placed, what plans do you have in place maybe can't we replace these foreign teachers with those international graduates, those who have done math and science and the technology. And again, on that point, do you have data for those students who are doing math and science presently? And then, I don't know, because I'm from Limpopo, maybe I'm thinking I like within that Kanyao about opening this teacher's training. I think it's important that I'm supporting you on this one. And then on the advertisement, I'm happy that I got this information guide. Do you still have more to advertise on media? Maybe on with a 9 languages, where you can advertise for the young one to be interested in teaching. And then, yes, no, I'm finished, Jefferson. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. I have a comment and two and a half questions. And my comment relates to the quantity and quality of teachers. It looks like it's an issue that you cannot raise with DBE. On that score, I think we're barking the wrong tree here. But of course, there are a number of other things or factors that relate to quantity as well as to quality. Maybe that they could respond to. My first question, Che, is with regard to the appointment of temporary educators, the figure in 2011 for KwaZulu-Natal is 15,981 temporary teachers. Statistically, that signifies that there was something happening in KwaZulu-Natal. What was happening? Because other provinces have 2,000, 4,000, 5,000, 2,000, 4,000. But KZN, 15,981. My second question relates to foreign teachers or foreign educators. From 2008 up to 2011, the numbers have been steadily increasing, but we've been told that these are replaced whenever a suitably qualified person is found. I just want to know what is the replacement rate if the numbers are, keep on increasing. The half question relates to the, is it an acronym? You see, if you are a minor and you are among pedagogic people, you always find yourself at a disadvantaged corner. Those REUV, I suspect that it is a pedagogic term, it's not a mining term. What does it mean?
I do have a question, but it's not in relation to the presentation. But I don't know whether can I just pass it on. I think with regard to teachers, we found that some teachers will move from one school to another school because of certain problems. Like Honorable Kanyahu has indicated that in rural areas we find that in the past, there were houses that were allocated to teachers just to make sure that they can recruit teachers from outside the rural area and come and reside in that particular area. But I know of one particular school that does that to certain type of people and not to certain type of people. For instance, the Army School in Pretoria, I've forgotten the name of that school, where there's a hospital also in that area. It's a compound, a big compound. You find that in that area, most people that are working there are soldiers. The doctors are soldiers, nurses are soldiers, but the exception is with the teachers. They just take ordinary teachers. They are given a place to stay only if you are senior. Once you get married, you are checked off that area.
we have to find a place of your own with your family. And it results in most teachers leaving that school. And another thing that happens is that when you're a teacher there, because you're not a soldier, when you get sick, you can't access help in the hospital there. It is happening. That time I do have even evidence of that one. So I just want to know whether is the police of that area or is the Department of Education aware of such that is happening in that area. And if you are aware, what are you doing concerning that? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot for that. And I think the department should just clarify us on correctional services too, because look at these people are being educated. And then also when it comes to hospitals, because we hear that they are teaching these learners that is hospitalized for a long time too. You know, you can speak to us about it. And if you don't have direct answers today for us, come back again with answers itself. My interest is, I just want to expand a bit on the question that our Honourable Anshana asked. Because remember, I think it was last year, we had a meeting between higher education, basic education, and Umalusi, it was the 24th of April. And both had to speak to their needs and then continue speaking to each other. Because like early in the year, I had a meeting with principals from different schools within the Port Elizabeth area. I came from our former ex-Model C school, because I had the principals of, I'm just trying to think on these white schools, Alexander High wasn't there. But I had principals from Morningside wasn't there, but there were two principals. The schools are around Green Acres, I can't remember. Patterson's principal, Chapman going as far as Boysen's Park. And they felt, because they spoke of it to what we are speaking to here, when it comes to the Funza Lusaka, that the majority of our children, our students coming from the university, and it's those universities within the Eastern Cape and even Port Elizabeth, going as far as Grahamstown. They didn't have the spare skills, but the majority held out, you know, those type of subjects. So I think it's important, because I brought it up when we did our budget review, and I'm bringing it up again now, that they couldn't get like the maths teachers or the science teachers from university. I think there were a few technical subjects, you know, they could get that. But the university was only teaching them standard subjects. And I don't know whether you are monitoring what they are doing when it comes to our learners. Then the other thing, discussion up with the Honourable Hanyaho, I'm not sure, but you know, when we were at university, they only had 1 year we went into the field. But the college, you start from the first year, you know, going into the field. But with university, that's actually something here, and you go into the field itself. Do you speak to universities, you know, to explain to them how do you feel about the product? Because we tell you, go on, you know, continue with the conversation that we started with. And then what I'd like to say to the department, we have to congratulate you when it comes to NEDU. Because NEDU is an independent structure that the department put into place. And those findings that we're speaking about in this committee is findings that came through NEDU to the department. Let's start answering the questions, please. Huh? All right, now the answer, and then people who want to go out for freshly, there's freshly and coffee outside, you may leave and come back again. But let's start answering. All right. But come in your question, please.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Mm-hmm. Just to indicate that my account indicate that there's an average of about 45 questions.
Don't you just count the questions, because all these questions are as interrelated. Because my question I asked for Tsin was, what the Honorable Bonshana said, what the Honorable Hanyako said, even Honorable Lapo went right through to Honorable Dina. So don't count as 40 questions. They're so interrelated because we speak about quality. We speak about quantity.
All that I'm asking for is that we might need more time. Yes. We wanted to know how much time do we have so that colleagues can start to
I'm not going to give you time. I'm just going to stop you. And what you don't answer, let's give it to 12:15.
Okay.
And if you don't answer those, you're going to come back in writing. But truly, if we say Thursday, then it's Thursday.
That's fine. Colleagues will start.
Hey, these people like speaking, like asking questions, even our officials do. Thank you, sir.
Our apologies, Honorable Chair. Let me start by answering the question that some of them are interrelated. I think it is much more important to talk maybe about plans. Whether do we have plans to really retain or attract teachers to be in rural areas, to go and teach in the rural areas? And the response is yes. There is a policy in place around incentivizing of teachers to teach in rural areas. It is in place. And I think it is important for us to say, talk maybe about how best that policy is implemented, but the policy is in place. Secondly, it is around the integrated strategic framework for teacher education and training. Whether do we talk to our colleagues in higher education, the response is yes. We've got a forum wherein we actually interact with education institution, with the Department of Education, in looking into progress around the integrated strategic framework for teacher education and development, on how, what are the plans to provide the ongoing support for teachers, for teacher education. We have reported previously here, but we will also provide the response in writing in this regard, wherein we indicated that there are institutions that have already started, like colleges of education. We referred to Mpumalanga, and there was a second one that spoke about a college of education that we spoke about in the previous sitting. To say, what is it that we need to do to provide an ongoing support to teachers who are within schools? And there are quite a number of initiatives that we need to speak to. One, we spoke much more about the better utilization of the teacher assistance centers in the country. That needs, as part of the plans, that how best they can be utilized to provide the ongoing support as opposed to what has been referred to that is two-day training that teachers go through. But to say, can we have an institutionalized approach to ensure that we provide that support to teachers? But beyond that, we have entered into a lot of collaborations to promote teacher education and development within the department. One is the work that we're doing with ISASA, the independent schools, wherein we identified learners that must go through universities, but those learners are actually in schools as one of the models. You know, you are in a school, yet you are registered with a higher education institution. We are placing them into those schools. This is one example that I'm translating. We have collaboration with ISASA around. Furthermore, it is important that to reflect around the Renew report. The goal is to suggest, it's asking a fundamental question, whether teachers can't or won't. Want to talk about this matter. And We are, I think we are responding to that needy revolt. Whether you deal with issues of accountability or whether you deal with issues of data development, because both go hand in hand. Hence, it becomes important for us to indicate our response and the initiatives that are there in the department around data development. Hence, we've got a data union collaboration to say with our social partners, which are data unions. We've got programs that we run with them around the foundation phase. Others look at numeracy and literacy in the foundation phase. And we can go on to say that what are those initiatives, what are the lessons that we have learned through the teacher union collaboration to deal with issues of assisting educators in schools. There's another issue that I need just to reflect on very quickly. When you look at the challenges of the Eastern Cape, because Honorable Smiles reflected on specific schools in particular, Jovan's Center in Lady Grey and in Park East, the non-compliance in terms of implementing resolutions is a problem. Because if both are declared in September, you will start having vacancies to those schools that need teachers. Because we know that there are schools that will lose learners, there are schools that are going to gain learners. It's a rule that we follow learners. Now, you will start having an environment wherein, after the post has been declared, by the MEC, the post basket, then they are distributed using the timelines to schools. Then in January, or rather in October, November, a school would know what is the school's post establishment looking like. Then that will determine to say that these are the number of vacancies that the school has. It's because of the pressure points that we have experienced in the Eastern Cape, of the non-movement of the excess educators, it has created an environment which makes us to really come up with guidelines on assisting the department in the Eastern Cape in particular through Section 120 to say that because the compensation of employees was quite hard in the Eastern Cape, because if you will have a situation of double-parked educators, a teacher that was supposed to move from school A to school B is not moving from school A to school B. Now we are forced to employ a temporary teacher in school B where there's actually a need for a teacher. We've come up with mechanisms working with the intake department in saying that it will be impossible for the proper placement of educators will happen if you still have excess educators that are not moving. That is the situation that we find ourselves in the Eastern Cape now, currently, where there's a robust placement of excess educators, as we speak. There have been other people who are complaining that teachers are moving to schools without due authorization. But the reality is that there has been authorization that teacher A, you must move to school B. The second aspect that we need to deal with is that this is what is currently happening. That is why there's a high rate of uncertainty. Because it's only now that we are starting to feel the movement. Because what we want to see, we want to see stability. Once you have got stability that the excess educators moved into the posts that are currently there in the system, as in the Eastern Cape in particular, you start seeing stability. Then there will be vacancies. You cannot have vacancies, bulletins, in the Eastern Cape currently. I'm just making that example. Which are not closed. You need to have a closed bulletin so that teachers within the system can be able to move from point A to point B. But the system that they are using in the Eastern Cape is that they are starting within a district. To say that within this district, these are the schools that require this type of an educator. So the movement has started to happen within before it goes between districts. That means between district A to district B. I needed to explain that. But that has caused a lot of tensions within the province, so between the department and the unions, specifically that. Because that has been taking place for quite a long time now. Hence, we had budgetary problems because the compensation of employees was rocketing quite high in the province. Let me also speak to the other issue around the question that has been raised around Fundamushaka, basically. We are, before starting with Fundamushaka, the issue of actual data, numbers, whether we talk about the shortage of math teachers, language teachers, and the rest, we have entered into a rigorous system of profiling all educators in the system. Because once you profile educators in the system, you will then be able to understand the need. Because the need is only located at the level of the school. And that is where, for instance, if you say that there's a shortage of a math teacher in school A, through the bus provisioning, you will then be able to be given an opportunity for you to have that particular math teacher. But I think through this system that we are going to go through of profiling all educators in the system, we will then be able to identify what is the need. On whether Fundamushaka is, we see that it is working or not. We have demonstrated here that there has been an increase in terms of the placement of Fundamushaka levels. If you look off on the presentation, I'm sorry. Okay, fine. Yes. Okay, perfect. We're looking at the success rate of the placement of Fundamushaka levels. That 91% is for the whole of last year. The 66% is for 3 months, that is from January up until March. To us, we are saying that we are telling that area quite vigorously. Because in previous years, it took us to reach 66% quite the whole year. But since last year, there's been a vigorous concentration on the placement of the Fundamushaka by PETs. And we've been able as CDE to really focus on this matter. We are reporting to CM almost every CM meeting about the placement of the Fundamushaka itself, because this one is very critically important. The issue around the filling of vacancies, what is the direction that you provide national? We've developed guidelines on HR in terms of right from the school level to the district to the province, and we'll provide you with those guidelines that we have developed in order for us to support the placement of teachers in schools and supporting provinces and districts to say, from the identification of a 3,000 excess, what is it that is to be done? That was only to provide, say, that these are the guidelines that we need to speak to.
I think most of the questions have been covered in relation to the foreign educators as well as the Funza graduates. But if you look at the number of Funza graduates that come out a year and the number of vacancies that are in provinces or the number of teachers that we require, then you will see that there are not sufficient graduates that are coming out currently to the number of teachers that are required in particular areas. And so therefore, it has affected the number of foreign teachers that get employed. in certain provinces, like for instance the example of the Western Cape, I agree that I think we need to look at it very closely to understand what is happening around that fundamental increase. It is a large percentage, and we do not have clear answers to some of the reasons why they have such a high number of foreign teachers employed in the Western Cape. Some of the problems around placement of the Funza is that you have a teacher who comes from a village. You know, one of the ways we thought we could assist the problem of placement in rural areas is if you take people from the rural area, learners who will then go back home and go and teach in that community. Initially, those were some of the ideas of what we thought would work. Now, the bursary gives you opportunity to apply to any university in the country. So if you come from a rural area, you don't have to go to the nearest university. You can go from Limpopo's most rural area and come and study in Western Cape. Now, what has happened there is that because Western Cape, to use that example, has got three universities here, so more universities you can place the students in. Now, when after they have experienced living for 4 years in Western Cape, when you must now apply back to the village for that post, you find the teacher in the schools in Western Cape applying only there, and not going to the school in Limpopo or even the village we thought you were going to go back to. So some of the things around the management of that needs to be tightened up so that we're a bit more prescriptive, you know, like almost like you must go back, and we are looking to change the contract like that. So that we say you must, if we take you from that village, you have a responsibility to go back into that village again and give a certain number of time to that village. But then you have to balance it up against the constitution of our country, and you know, there are some balances that you have to look at very carefully. So rather than punitive just to people in that village, a better way to look at it is to say maybe some of the things we should be doing is to say, look, shouldn't all teachers go and do time in the rural area? And that you put time there as part of your training, almost like what the doctors have to do. And, you know, you must go into a particular area and go and do time. So those are some of the mechanisms that we are looking at. But, of course, with that, if you do those kind of things as a compliance, you must have accommodation in place ready. So part of our infrastructure will have to look at, you know, housing opportunities for teachers and so on. So it's a complex matter, and we are looking at it. But we do not have firm solutions in all areas, other than to tighten up on the concept of the bursary and say, you know, if we give you this bursary, these are our expectations. And that's what we're beginning to do. And that also influences the placement. Because if you find that a teacher has been applying only in a particular area and not the area they come from, or even if they don't come from that area, now you have to engage. It's true that the contractual obligation will end at a particular time. But we force them because they limit where they want to. You know, if you apply in an area that doesn't need you, for instance, Western Cape doesn't need the teachers. A lot of teachers go to the university to study there. But those teachers are not needed in the Western Cape. They are needed elsewhere in the country. Now, if they keep applying in Western Cape, what do we do? Must we say to the universities, no, look, you have three universities in Western Cape. Let's not allow you to have this bursary. Let's give only to the areas that require teachers, so that, you know, you can't do that. We need as many teachers to get into as many universities as possible. So it's a problem that we need to deal with directly with the ones we give the bursary to. We think that in the approach that we have taken, we are succeeding. As we say, this year we are at 66 already. The remainder, we will place them in the provinces that require it. They have applied in provinces that don't need teachers. So now we have to approach them and say to them, look, you didn't look or didn't approach us correctly in terms of where you want. You just applied in, you know, blanketly in a place that doesn't need you. Now here is a person placed in. Can you please go there? And then that will allow us to reach that difference of the school that's currently placed. In relation to do we know how many teachers we have and how many teachers we require? The answer to that is yes. We are able to read from the personal system how many teachers we currently have in the system, And if we look at the attrition rate, we are able to tell you per annum, or even per month, we can tell you how many teachers are leaving, and that gives us then an indication of what our requirements are. What we are not able to read currently, uniformly in country, is the profile of the teacher. So we can't tell you that if you've got 360,000 permanent teachers in the system that you read on Bitcoin, we can't tell you that these teachers are utilized correctly. And that's why we are working on very vigorously on profiling of teachers, and so that we can get a uniform way in which provinces actually capture information in the personal codes so that we can read that off the system. If we are able to do that, we would be much better at giving you an analysis of correct utilization of teachers. So that's why Mr. Rujana has indicated the areas that we are working at vigorously. Our trainings are useful to us in that they tell us a story about what we have in the system. You must know, it doesn't help you to sit in the system and you don't know where your teachers are at. If you cannot be trained to say that mainly people are leaving for purposes of resignation if they leave, and you do not put in place an exit interview for those teachers, you never know the reasons why they left. So if currently it's showing you in trends that most reasons why kinds of teachers leaving is through a resignation, not through death, then you have to understand what are the reasons. What is the age at which they leave? What is the attraction? So those are trends that we read, a picture that we read, and we try and understand. Similarly, if you see you have an aging core, you need to understand the health of this aging core to know that they will be healthy enough to go to 65, or actually, you know, where they are health-wise, you may have at any given point some few people, many people living. Now, we need to understand that, and trends tell you that. And so that is the purpose why we give that slide, say, what are the trends, and what is the meaning for us in the department. We need to understand the story that it tells. And then to get into that story and understand the interventions that we need to put in place, or the policy changes that we need to introduce to address some of the stories that the trends tell us. And then the answer question on the RETUV, what does that mean, that acronym? It's called Relative Education Qualification Value. And this is a long name to say, what is a teacher's qualification? So in other words, if you have got only a BA, and that 1 year that the Honorable Chairperson was talking about, then because that 1 year is seen as, it's 3 years for a BA, then 1 year for the HDE, then you are RETUV 14 because you have 4 years of study. And if you have got the old teacher's diploma, the PTS, which was 2 years, 2 years plus afterwards you did a matric. So in the old days, they would count every single qualification that you do. So you will find in the system there are few of them there, but some of them go right up to RQV 15. And it's because the teacher started out with standard 8 plus matric, standard 8 plus college training 2 years, then afterwards got a matric qualification, then that increased the qualification level of the teacher. Then afterwards they started to do the university degree. Then after you've got three courses into your BA degree, then you get into RQV 14. Were you now 30? No, you were 12 and you get into 13. And then when you have passed the second year, when you've got 5 courses, you were regarded as a qualified teacher for RQV 14. Because already you are a qualified teacher, so you don't need that 1 year of HDE. So if you've got 5 university courses and you haven't even yet got your BA, you must still do another 2 maybe or so courses that will give you the recognition of qualification because professionally you are already a teacher. So that's why it's got this long length, you know, of relative education qualification value because it's relative to where you are at. Yeah. And then I think that a lot of the other questions have been answered. We have data on how many, you know, you can read in the math and science teachers the data. Because of the Hunza Lushaka bursary, we know exactly how many people are trained in particular areas. previously when the bursary just started, there wasn't correct allocation in terms of the need. They were not speaking to each other. But right now, because we've looked into the needs and to align it, we can tell you exactly how many people are offered bursaries, and you are not allowed to get a bursary if it's not in critical areas that we require. So that's how we manage it. Thank you, Jefferson.
Any questions? Okay. There are two issues, Honorable Chair, that I think we needed to really focus on. One is the profile of the bursaries. And have a full presentation around the Hunza, Lushaka, so that we can comprehensively deal with those needs. And secondly, is around the teacher education and development. Those are the two critical two presentations that are necessary to complement our inputs here. Maybe the chair would guide us into how that will be managed in terms of providing you a full presentation on those two.
This initial teacher training through distance education, which is...
I tried, they answered, because they say the teachers in the school, some of the teachers are in the school, or they are taken to school to teach. I think at the beginning they spoke to it.
No,
sure. There's no problem. All right, hold on. Just repeat what you said there when it comes to NISA, you know, those areas. Repeat.
No, thank you very much. The response was around providing ongoing support for teachers who are already in the system. And also, I spoke about the initiatives that the Department of Higher Education has in terms of opening colleges of education. And I also spoke to the collaboration that we have with the independent schools, as well as the teacher union collaboration. Hence, our plea was to come back and provide the comprehensive briefing around the intermediate strategic framework as to how far are we in terms of implementing that. Whether you talk about initial teacher education or continuous education, yes, we're coming back.
If you just speak, yes, as because you were too busy with the work. That's why you missed it. If you just speak offhand, I think, you know, like when you're a teacher and people speak to you about foundation phase, then you always pick up that when it comes to the training, therefore it is so important, don't just move, you know, that come back and speak to us about the training of teachers. Because normally when you are taught through university and you're back taught through a college, it is different. Because like even the Honorable Guinness spoke about our qualification. Because if you were taught at university, when it comes, you know, you have to get down to the level of that child. And therefore we sit with problems. So that foundation phase, we have to be very clear, you know, on how the training is being done. Because I know with my training, I can't go and teach a oohs and the ahs and say those things. Because I'm not trained, you know, to do phonetics. Yeah, I'm not trained to do phonetics. And therefore your child has a problem with phonetics. Even if you're a teacher, you look for a teacher that can do that work. And then the training, you will stick to the training. Because I think many times it comes up in our meetings that we wouldn't like to discuss this workshop. The training should be longer. You spoke to demand and supply. You spoke well. But the thing is that we want trends over. You know, you take your trend, your past trend, and you look futuristic 10 years' time. Because there we sit in with a problem because we start in place that it was an aging corpse. Now we try, you know, to you know, get younger teachers to come into the system. And then what worries me is what Ms. Gaya said. We think I don't need the Funza Lusaka, but the others need it. But my problem is always you have temporary teachers. how to balance all that up. Because like I will always say, you're going to oversaturate the system one of these days. Because strength is good. We must look at the strengths. Because, and I'm so happy when you speak about attraction, your retention, you know, things like that, those policies that we ask for, that you are putting into place. Then, when it comes to what Honorable Smile said, you know, the budget. There are substantive posts, and substantive posts are budgeted for. So let us put the teachers there, because it is money. It is a temporary teaching post. Let the teacher either, you know how long they're supposed to be in the system before they become permanent, because they can do it. Because if it's substantive, do it. Substitute, we know it, it's a... But I think our question there when it came to budget was premature. Because normally when it comes to budget, you see it was in the annual report under HR. Because there you're going to specify to, you know, for the staff or officials or the teachers being absent, so much money you are spent. You normally do it in the annual report at the back. But we never seem to question you on that section of the report. We always do everything there in front. And then the excess. You know, and then the other problem we need, it's so good to say, you know, moving out teachers, you know, the excess teachers. But many times the principal will tell you it's not according to their needs. Because they all need a math teacher, but it's an excess teacher with Afrikaans. You know, so that is our problem. You know, because we remember these things on the ground. Therefore, members speak to what they are seeing and what we are seeing when we go on these hearings. Profiling is good, and I'm glad you thought, because I think the last time that you were here, you could profile your schools. You still show us, gave us a demonstration. But just add more into that we asked, because I don't think you added everything in. Other specialist teachers. Oh, yes, specialist teachers. Honorable Hanyako. Besides maths and science and technology, scarce skills, these remedial teachers, because see, I know the Honorable Gina likes sticking on program 5 as something enrichment. So we need that integrated approach that you're speaking about when it comes to our other departments. And then I think when I talked to Funtelisaka, I just put this in, because you didn't speak us where is value for money. Because two people spoke about the investment. Value for money. And I think that is important. And then these conditions. You know, we speak of the Bill of Rights. Put in your conditions that if you are expected to teach in rural areas, then you have to go to rural areas. We are arguing and debating with you the whole time. In the last meeting too, because, you know, I know it is wrong, according to the Bill of Rights, but it is stipulated, even if it's in small print. If you don't read the small print, who is in small print? Yes, that, yes, it's who is in small print? Because people don't read small print. And then when it comes to your obligations, but it's written there. You know, things like that. Or are you so good at tracking that you don't want to put anything in small print? But thanks a lot. And I think when we get you again, because I think this is, you improve each time you come back. We had this once. And a person can see there's a vast improvement when it comes to HR strategy. Because remember the HR strategy when you spoke out the first time was outdated. But thanks a lot, because we must say each time you come back, we are learning more, but there's still more that you can put into it. Thanks a lot. Let's go over to textbooks. Mr. Mulvey.
Chairperson, thank you very much, especially the last remarks that you made, that our engagement with you are indeed developmental and you begin to see the fruits of your work. And we appreciate all the time when we come to meet with you. This is one committee in my 30 years plus in the public service that I really get very engaged with. And I'm not saying this for anything that you know. Not at all. On a lighter note, Honorable Lovemore referred to the elephant in the room earlier on, referring to the NEED report. I must say that the biggest elephant in the room is concurrent functions. And we all know that the chairperson committed previously that we will engage with the matter. I will keep on referring to the Monkey Valley experience, referring to the experience of our meeting with DHET, and I think those experiences are quite useful. It's on a lighter note. On a serious note, Chairperson, we're giving an update of what we've been reporting to the Portfolio Committee on regular intervals, so we're not starting afresh. Well, as I take it that the majority of you are teachers. In teaching, you move from the known to the unknown. You move from the simple to the complex. So I'll touch that quickly. As it would be contained in the letter convening this meeting, we are reporting on textbooks and workbooks. And the areas that are covered are indicated in there. I won't be going through each and every bullet. I speak to the slides and run in the interest of time and allow engagements to clarify some of the issues. I think I need to spend some time on this one. In 2012, the Council of Education Ministers took a resolution that by 2014, every learner must have a core textbook in every subject for every grade. That was in 2012. Woefully oblivious of the fact that there are many learners in the system who do not have a core textbook in every subject. The SUPNEC report in 2007 indicated that our textbook coverage was at 45% compared to 85% of Swaziland. The minister likes using the example of Swaziland, saying Swaziland had a higher textbook coverage than us, and there were arrangements that we should loan about 2 billion to Swaziland. Yet we've got a lower textbook coverage compared to Swaziland. That was in 2007. In the minister's budget speech, the minister reflected on the fact that with the progress that we have made, we've now increased textbook coverage. With the introduction of workbooks, our coverage moved from 78% to about 80%. Now, why 2014 of universal coverage? The basic logic was informed by the fact that we are introducing TEPS-aligned textbooks. And the introduction of TEPS-aligned textbooks started in 2012 with foundation phase and grade 10. 2011, intermediate phase and grade 11. And we are seeing in the foundation phase and grade 10, it must be universal coverage. 2015 for intermediate phase and grade 11 must be universal coverage. Now, when Honorable Dikoko asked the question in the last meeting where we interacted with a report of this nature, he said to me, in schools that we visit, we do come across observations where learners do not have textbooks for every subject in every grade. I said, there is something, yes. Simply because we are aligning the universal coverage to TEPS aligned. That's why we are talking about 2014. I've taken some time in explaining this matter for the benefit of the committee, for the benefit of the public, for the benefit of the media. Because many a time this matter is misunderstood. You go to schools, you discover that not all learners do have a codex rule in every subject for every grade, and you say, ah, you said universal coverage. The resolution was taken in 2012, and the record of CEM can attest to that. The minister is working 24 hours around the clock, 7 days a week, interacting with the Minister of Finance to make sure that come 2014, we have universal coverage in every subject for every learner in every grade. I thought, Chairperson, I must spend some time in that area. This is the last report that we shared with this committee, with the NCOP Select Committee on Education, Sports and Recreation. This was the data that we had up to April 2013, which indicated that nationally the delivery of textbooks stood at 98.1%. And let me explain again. This is not delivered to schools. This is delivery of textbooks, because the distinction between the two sometimes get us into trouble also, including in the media cycle, when we say all schools have received textbooks, which is not equivalent to all learners having received textbooks. In this case, 98% of learners for the intermediate phase and grade 11, textbook delivery and provision stands at 98.1%. If you talk about schools, it would definitely be close to 100% of schools. But in those schools where delivery has happened, there are shortages. And the reasons for the shortages will explain. And then this is the updated data of asset make. We're getting reports virtually on a monthly, weekly basis. And we channel these reports to the Office of the DG for remediation, for actioning, and so on. We report regularly to HEDCOM, Council of Education Ministers. Honorable members will appreciate that. We moved from 98.1% to 99.9%. The majority of provinces have reached 100%, as you can see, honorable members. There are two provinces that are still battling with 100%, I mean getting to 100%. Northern Cape is one of those, as well as Limpopo at 99.8%. That is a reflection of shortages, not a reflection of non-delivery. And a few of these, we've got examples of them, and we are ready even to give them to anyone, including the media. We have provided the media, by the way, with CD-ROMs of PODs. You want PODs for all the schools, we can give that to you. And that's the basis from which we depart in monitoring this process. In terms of stationery, we can confirm that provinces have reported that we are at 100% all the way. Stationery is not one of our problems. I'm going to isolate some of the reasons, not cover all of them in the interest of time. We have a problem of lack of capacity in some of the publishers meeting their deadlines, especially the so-called independent publishers, because you don't necessarily have a forum to deal with these. They don't belong to PASA, they don't belong to ABBA, and these two are associations for publishers. And these are generally your small publishers. Now, it is a policy of government that is part of inclusivity, that we, as part of making sure that there's a shared benefit in terms of economic benefits, that even small publishers must be involved in our procurement and delivery of textbooks. The other issue relates to some of those that were not even registered in the system. That led to immense delays. Some of them were not even okay with some of the systems that we use, slow collection of orders in terms of what needed to be processed to get books delivered. We all know the impact of the transport industrial action last year, and the issues that I would like to harp on now and again. And I must concede, we still have a problem with the validity of our data. We use EMIS data, which is not operational data. What does it mean? For the purchase of 2014, you use 2013 data, and there are discrepancies between your actual and the data that you use. What complicates the issue, honorable members, because you are public representatives, parents do not register learners on time. It complicates our planning. Treasury will tell you that we need to keep to fiscal prudence. Providing in surplus all the time gets us into serious trouble with treasury. We're not really adhering to fiscal prudence if we do that. So we have that challenge. The other issue is inward and outward migration. Parents hold the view that they have a democratic right to take their children from this school to that school at any point in time, regardless. In the past, there used to be a policy that regulates as to when can you take your child out of a school to another school. But now late, parents just take learners from this school to another school. And when they arrive to a new school, they expect to be given a new package of textbooks and stationery. I will leave the others like the addendum catalog, heavy rains, which is well known to you, threats, and litigation challenges, particularly in the Eastern Cape, by NGOs such as Legal Resource Center, in respect of central procurement, which has proven to accrue much more benefits, economic benefits of scale. Now, what happened? We then had to make sure that we mediate shortages. Provinces used the call center. Some provinces, such as the Eastern Cape, ordered surplus stock with a very good understanding with publishers. And the Eastern Cape could only pay for what they used, but the publishers made surplus stock available, which was a peculiar arrangement. It's very rare that you get people who make money out of a business of this nature agreeing to deliver stock and only accepting an arrangement where you only pay for what you use. Actually, it does not happen that way. Before printing happens, there must be a commitment. That's why the orders and so on. And then housing had to get additional funds to service their shortages and so on. We had to strengthen our oversight at district level. And Chairperson, quickly, I'm not really going to deal with each of the schools. This is the response that we're providing in terms of the schools that you requested us to report on. Let me deal briefly with the Eastern Cape. The challenge in the Eastern Cape, because the Eastern Cape engaged in central procurement for the first time. Central procurement means buying for everybody. And when you do that, you've got the power to negotiate to get more books for paying slightly less what would happen when you go as an individual school. Now, even your Section 21 schools were encouraged to become part of that. Now, in the Eastern Cape, some of them played riverbank kind of arrangement, in and out, and it delayed the process. But eventually, the majority of them bought into the arrangement, and that's why you saw even in the print and the electronic media, some of the schools appreciating for the first time that they received their textbooks at least on time, year before, compared to what happened the previous year. So what we have put in here briefly accounts for that. Now, in respect of Limpopo, shortages were also around the grade 11 math and science Siyavula textbooks that we print and deliver with the Mike Shuttleworth Foundation. We had problems with the government printers. Government printers could also not meet their time frame. The policy of government encourages us to use government printers as well, especially if we get value for money. But unfortunately, this time around, they delayed us, And as a result of that, the delivery happened much later than expected. But as you can see from the information provided, those books were provided to them. In respect of KZN, well, shortages, remediation did happen where specifics were provided. Unfortunately, in some instances, we didn't get specifics. As a result of that, the province couldn't furnish us with details. Northern Cape, the problem is prevalent mainly in your Olifants Hoek area. We all know the difficulties around Olifants Hoek, grade 11 and below learners who had no schooling last year. All of them are expected to repeat those grades. There had been no schooling, and the policy is very clear to progress on the basis of the work done and the competencies and knowledge demonstrated through assessment. So you've got large numbers of learners who are repeating grades. Secondly, you've got pressure from the neighboring villages of Kuruman and so on moving into that area, and that resulted into huge shortages which were unexpected. It's a phenomenon that was not expected at all. The repetition of learners was planned for, but the inflow from the neighboring areas, we don't know what occasioned that, but the officials are telling us that it's actually something that they did not anticipate. But these instances have been responded to. We're also providing some evidence of proof of delivery, Chairperson. I've once more indicated that we are ready to provide more, as much as you can require. If you need for all the schools, particularly in Limpopo, for all of them, that information can be made available for you. If you require for Eastern Cape, the Section 101B provinces, we can provide that as well. The oversight work that you do help us a lot in terms of making sure that all of these areas are covered. So essentially, these are the PODs. That's what we call PODs. POD stands for proof of delivery. And then, quite interesting, after a bit of a tussle between DBE communication, through the facilitation also of the press ombudsman, we were able to correct what was reported by City Press, particularly in Limpopo, on shortages that were long remediated. And City Press acknowledged that, as you can see, they corrected that from the subsequent publication that was issued. Now, the monitoring that we carried out was based on a sector plan. And the sector plan, I must indicate, it's the basis from which provinces develop their plans, and we also use it to monitor the process. Because all the deliverables are captured in the sector plan. As to when do you start with your warehousing, when do you start with your distribution, when do you start with placement of orders, when do you engage with activities that happen at school level where publishers go and market themselves and so on. All of that is captured in the sector plan. And we also reported those structures as indicated in there. Officials from DVE visited districts and selected schools, sampled schools to monitor delivery. We also providing regular reports to the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency on our plans, on our delivery rate. We've also this time around reported to the Public Protector. It was a matter of interest to the Public Protector in terms of our plans, in terms of our rate of delivery. We reported to the South African Human Rights Commission as well. We've never reported this way before. So this matter was of huge interest in the country. We reported to the court in respect of Section 27. We've also been furnishing reports to the Portfolio Committee and the NCOP Select Committee, as I said earlier on. For 2014, we used the SECA plan, which was issued in October, by the way, for provinces to develop their plans. October 2012, it's not a mistake. 2012, And provinces were given about 6 months to develop their plans and align them, and 3 or 6 months, if I'm not mistaken. And they did so. So we're monitoring progress report based on this. The intention is that we should deliver textbooks and stationery, the latest by the end of October. We use November and December to deal with shortages identified then. Shortages that are going to emerge from January, February, will remediate. You'll see some of the measures that we are employing to build on this, which is what we are doing. I'm saying the catalogue was released on the 28th of March 2013. Provinces received this catalogue in March. So they had enough time to do what needs to be done to meet the required time frames. Retention and retrieval, we've issued a circular person last year to encourage schools to increase their retrieval rate. Our biggest challenge remains retrieval. Some of the problems complicating our lives in Limpopo can be traced to this problem of retrieval. What some of the principals are doing, they are asking for surplus stock, huge surplus, because they have problems with retrieval. That's one. Two, some of them ask for surplus stock because they have little faith that when they request for top-ups, given their previous experience, that the department will come to the party. You'll remember in the MECAP report, some of the schools said, we're receiving books for the first time ever since 10 years ago. That's what schools said in Limpopo. And the information that you are getting is that we have a problem around retrieval, but some of it is created given the fact that principals are working on reserves so that during difficult times they are able to draw on their reserves and then replenish what would have been difficult to retrieve. We have also developed a policy on retention and retrieval, which is going through the process. We want to link success to retrieval with incentives. To say that if schools are able to retrieve as many books as they can, money which would have been used to top up can be given to schools for development purposes and for other areas of need like curriculum development, areas of the content gap that you talked about with Mr. Kujan. That money could be used there for professional development. We have been liaising with provinces. This data is not readily available, Chairperson. We want to have it district by district in terms of the retrieval rate. But the information that we managed to get between that time when we received the invitation to come to this meeting and now is that we're able to get 26% of the districts. And what we could glean from that information is that our retrieval rate stands at 90%. I don't think we're doing well, even with this sample. I would have been much happier if our retrieval rate was at least around 98% or 99%. It would mean that we're taking good care of national assets. So it remains an area that we need to deal with in the system. Then workbooks. Well, I'm just indicating here in this slide that this started as a very small project. It has become a large enterprise. As you can see, in 2011, that was the consignment. In 2012, it increased by probably more than double the consignment that we are providing. And 2013 is the same as 2012. What we might have left out, we're also providing grade R workbooks this year and will also be providing next year in those languages. And this is the rate of delivery, 99.2%. Our Achilles heel, coming back again, is around data visibility because we don't use operational data for the coming school calendar year. We use the data of the outgoing school calendar year or financial year. These are the shortages that are reported to us, and this is part of the remediation that we use, the use of call centers, dealing this in the delivery for workbook 2 from workbook 1, so that we help to strengthen the data that we have. And this is the plan for 2014 in respect of the workbooks. And these are the timelines also in respect of the workbooks. We're providing this information to this committee because I know that this committee is going to monitor what we do. And you're going to remind us of these dates and the commitments that we have made. Going forward, which is the last part, we'll be strengthening our planning, bringing our timelines forward, as indicated earlier. We're using the annual national assessment data because it's incredibly valuable data. We administer this on year-to-year basis. The national senior certificate data, the workbook data, to enhance the NIS data. We use what we have, honorable members, unfortunately, or fortunately. We have also solicited commitment from provinces that we now increase our surplus stock from 5% to 10% to cater for the inward, outward migration, to cater for late registration, late submission, etc., and etc. This is not the best arrangement, but unfortunately, this is the way to go, given the current circumstances. We want to bring to an end that you end the first quarter of the school calendar year with some of the learners, especially leading up to the resolution of CEF, that come next year, every learner must have a textbook for every subject in every grade. We are going to implement strong penalties against publishers, including stopping them from making business with government if they fail to comply, particularly meeting time frames and so on. We are going to equally introduce increase the textbook retrieval rate by linking success of retrieval to incentives as well as punitive measures. Don't retrieve as many books as we expect. We take your money. We will use it for those books to replace those books. For those that make sure that we retrieve as many books as possible, we'll give them the money that would have been used for paying for books to do something else. We're also going to implement strong sanctions against officials in the system who are not going to make sure that we get the information on time, who monitor and make sure that we remediate shortages as fast as we should. So we started doing this already. The minister was in Limpopo last week. She has given very strict instructions to the administrator and the EOD that principals who provided wrong information to the media, including officials who did not carry out their responsibilities, must be disciplined. There are principals who reported shortages, and when schools were visited, it was found that those shortages were not there. There are schools that received multiple deliveries because of the misleading information that came from some of the officials and principals. But principals who have been useful reported to officials, and officials never dealt with the shortages that were reported. Those principals will be spared, they will be encouraged to continue to do so, including school governing bodies. The last one, we've also started a project which is called Building the Capacity of the State to Print and Deliver LTSM. The Webbooks project, the Math and Science project, the Mind the Gap Study Guide project provide evidence that the state can print and deliver stationery and textbooks. Countries such as Malaysia, Japan, India, who rank very high in terms of learner performance in your PILs, TIMS, and other international tests, they print textbooks. They even print for other countries. And there are many countries, even in Africa, that print and distribute textbooks at a very low cost, chairperson. Let me remind you that the Medical Science textbook, which in the market you'd pay for close to 200 to 300 rand, we're printing and delivering it at 33 rand. Now, 44, at 33 now, at 44 rand. And many experts are saying that book is of a very high quality. Schools appreciate it. Independent schools have asked for it, as well as some of our workbooks. We're making it available to them. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank you for this comprehensive report. But I just see some inconsistency. Because when it comes to the T-Rebel, there's units of action. When it comes to the other, it's the sanctions discipline. So I think you have to be consistent both sides. Whether it's punitive, whether it is discipline itself. I think from the last report we received, this is a very comprehensive one. But I ask members, because there are always questions, to ask questions on this report, and I am giving each member 3. Tell me too much. Tell me too much. 3. I'll start again from the one corner, or if we start, yes. Let me start from the other corner, because I gave this corner the third option. I'll start with you, Honorable Mani, and to Mululeka, and then I come to Honorable Lamo, then I go to Tata Hanyako, then Ponshana, and then last Honorable Tina, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. Mine will be comment. The issue of delivery of textbooks and workbooks has been with us for the past how many months, I don't know. I think every answers to almost every question you have already been given. I think that asking questions in these instances is a waste of time, because delivery is almost 100% right across. Thanks.
Moni, do not think by the members, please. Do not think by the members. Next. Do not think by the members, because that is some items but sharper than yours. So get fixed. Next.
Thank you, Professor. I also would like to appreciate the presentation. And also the fact that we are going to be giving them incentive, and also there will be punitive measures to those who don't want to retrieve textbooks. But what I want to know, are these schools not requiring their kids to pay back when they cannot return their textbook? What happens to the money that they've collected from the kids? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, I seriously differ. Obviously, wearing different spectacles from my colleague behind me. Yes, I'm just telling you, Chair, that I seriously differ. But I think that they're not rose-tinted. I was very tempted to call a point of order during that presentation, because I believe that it was disingenuous and it was totally misleading. It was misleading. And I'm going to tell you why, briefly, because that's not what I need to spend my time doing. What I need to spend my time doing is asking questions. The commitment made by the minister I have in response to a question that I asked is for universal coverage of textbooks by the end of 2014, not by the beginning of 2014. So that's the first misleading statement that is made. The target for universal coverage of textbooks has been taken out of your annual performance plan. It is not in your annual performance plan. So in writing,
for the year 2013-14, you have not committed to any level of delivery of textbooks. When you measure it per child needing a textbook, per child, per grade, per subject requiring a textbook. You've also put in a lot of commitment which you actually cannot adhere to. You've committed, for instance, to budgets, to punitive measures, incentives, etc. That all provincial is exactly what Ms. Mweli spoke about, so that's the concurrent function that is in the way. But the National Department of Basic Education cannot budget for the provinces. The report that was done to the Human Rights Commission was done on delivery versus what was ordered, not delivery versus what was required. It is disingenuous to say we've done this wonderful report. How wonderful are we, really? But okay, let me get back to the question. The question is, how do you know what the penetration rate is of textbooks? The last reference, and the reference made today was 78, which is 78% penetration rate. Now that 78% refers to a 2011 school monitoring survey, which has still not been published, by the way, 2011 school monitoring survey, which looked only at grade 6 mathematics and language books. Nothing else. Grade 6 mathematics and language books that came up with an average of 78%. Some provinces being a lot lower than that, and some provinces, including the Western Cape, being a lot higher than that. So my question is, do you know what the penetration rate is when you measure it per learner having a textbook for that grade, for that subject, in his or her own hands, and that he or she can take home? Chair, the slide 41, which is the second last slide, the one that just before the thank you, talks about centralization of function. It talks about more warm bodies to monitor and support PEDs, provincial education departments. This should not be the case. This should not be the case. If provincial education departments are not doing their job, then why are the warm bodies that are currently in the positions in the provincial education departments not being held accountable? I mean, it's accountability that we need, not an inflated bureaucracy to make sure that provincial education departments actually do their jobs. So I need some explanation on exactly what you intend to do there. And the last bullet point was on sub 41, was building the capacity of the state to print and deliver LTSM. Now, the core business of the Department of Basic Education is not printing and delivering textbooks. That's the core business of the publishing industry, or part of the publishing industry. It certainly isn't the core business of the state. One of the immediate concerns that I have is ideology. That books, for instance, on life sciences, for instance, on history, where you can have an interpretation on things, will be given a governmental interpretation. There is a danger of that. But put that aside. The core business of the state is not to print and deliver LTSM. Why are you looking at this? I don't believe you have the expertise, and I don't believe that it's a division that you should be developing at all. Is the publishing industry not coping? Do we not have enough capacity within the publishing industry to cope? That's three questions. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, this issue of the delivery of textbooks or material to schools, especially in Limpopo, is very, very controversial. I just want to start with something else. You know, somebody conducted a research in the past about the enjoyment, sweetness, and consumption of locusts. Those who don't know locusts, they are little insects that are eaten in some areas. And in some areas, if they see you eating those things, they wonder whether you really still have your mind in your head. Now, research was done. Unfortunately, the group that was targeted was the elderly people. And some of the questions I learned were questions like this. Do you like eating locusts? Are they real sweet? and so on and so on. But at the end of the whole thing, the conclusion was that this group of people don't like ordinary meat. They like locusts. But emphasis was not on comparison of ordinary meat and locusts. Emphasis was on sweetness, enjoyment, consumption of locusts. I'm leaving it there. Now, you know, it disturbs one sometimes when you see on TV or listen to the radio and you hear a sort of an argument between, in a way, between a learner and an official of the Department of Education. The learner says, I'm sharing a book with somebody when I do my homework. In Limpopo, we have a program. They call it, Kawalazela. Yes, Kawalazela. Kawalazela means somebody who whispers in your ear. It's not something that you say a lot, but just whisper in your ear. This. Now, on that program, very interesting. Now, they will ask the learner whether they have books in their school. The learner will say no. Especially when it comes to this question of doing homework and so on. In some cases, they say no, they were not delivered at all. They will go to the teacher who will support the learner. I don't know why they decide to treat it that way. But then the official of the Department of Education will stand up and say, it's a lie. They are lying. We have delivered. Now, I mean, common sense will tell you there's nothing wrong here. Here is a person who actually is doing homework in the evening by going to a friend to borrow a book and so on. But here is the official who says, no, such a thing is not existing. But he's not the one who is doing the homework. But he now argues, we have done everything. It is better, I mean, the way it was presented here by Matanzima. You understand, you know, there are problems in some cases. You have shortages in some cases. You know, you have several problems, but you know, you can't just make a blanket statement and say, no, we have received. Then you get angry. I say, this man, what does he mean? I say, I'm hungry. And he says, you are not hungry. And the stomach is not, his. So, I think that's the comment I want to make. No matter what I see this thing, I always think about this locust thing and say, look, actually, the victim there, you must listen very carefully to the victim. Yeah, than the person who comes and says, no, you are lying. How can I lie, say I'm hungry when I'm not hungry? No. Don't make me a stupid. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's really nice to know how close Honorable Khanyahu is to Mr. Moyo, to call him by his first name, Matazim. Okay. And delivery is really a huge responsibility. And now, looking back where one comes from, my previous life, you know, I can well understand that delivery is really linked to the admission policy. I mean, my school, fortunately, was a missionary high school. I never experienced shortage of books because our admission policy was very strict. We knew right at the end of December how many would be admitted and not more. Having said that, I just want to understand from the department whether this situation of textbook delivery is linked to the introduction of CAPS, and that when CAPS has been fully implemented, the delivery will be devolved down to provinces. Why I'm saying this? Because provinces now want to do away with these two types of categories of schools, Section 20, which is managed by the department, and Section 21, schools which manage themselves, their finances, ordering of schools, and so that we devolve this accountability in the delivery of books to the real implementer, that is, principals of schools. Because otherwise, this accountability is diluted. Principals will also always point the finger to the department, whereas they have the accountability when it comes to admissions and other preparatory measures in the delivery of this book. That's my first question, trying to understand. And also linked to that, I'm not familiar, I must admit, with all the procedures in the ordering of books besides the catalogue, the elimination of third parties in the ordering of these books, whether you are moving nearer, anywhere nearer to the elimination of third parties, you know. And perhaps, Chairperson, through you, there was this question of, I no longer hear about it, but I met somebody about a month ago who using one of Kanyako's, who whispered to me, you know. I don't know the type of noise he was making when he was saying, in Bob, we say, but Robert whispered to me about Edu Solutions' involvement still in the delivery of books and indies. What is the status of those? Do they have any impact in the non-delivery of books, or they're out of the equation now? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe if Mr. If Mr. Mweli can, clarify to this House what do they mean when they say universal coverage by 2014. We're just explaining as a teacher to a standard two child, grade four child. What is it that you are looking at when you're looking at the universal coverage of textbook come 2014? Whose competence is that? I think I'm getting into what Honorable Botani has asked. And to say, are we looking at you as the national department? Yes, I know you are overseeing all the provincial departments, but really, I think it should be proper sometimes when these things are clarified so that we know exactly what is it that you are dealing with as of now. Because for me, it's a piece of some of the time we are having you here coming to account to us with the numbers where, as we come from various provinces, we can just stand in front of you and say, but that is not the case. I'm coming from that province. This is what is happening. I don't know how I'm going to put it, but as long as we don't have a central point where just by the click of a button or whatever, we can get a picture, a national picture, where we still rely on the reports that come from various provinces. For me, it shows that it will always be a problem to what is it that you're accounting on. How can make sure that you work closely with those provincial departments? Because all of us, I'm telling here, as Honorable Lovemore has come up with different numbers, we can all come up with such examples, and sometimes I pity you because you only rely most of the time, again, on what you get from the provinces, and you cannot be there, but what's the plan? Because we just cannot keep on doing it. We cannot do this. We always say what is being ordered, that's what is needed. You know, how are we going to know? We need the system that is coordinated in that way, where we can say, indeed, we know exactly what is happening nationally. Chairperson, next year, we're all commending, it's the second one,
Well, all commended the department to us, and as to say, the minister has announced the introduction of African languages in all public schools next year, and we are all happy because we are saying our African languages are going to get the recognition that they deserve. What are the plans for that? Because I don't think we can, such an announcement can be done now as of now. Come next year, we'll be looking at textbooks, we'll be looking at learner books. Are any preparation for that? How far are you so that we don't encounter the same problems? There's so much venture, and when it comes to the topic of which we cannot ask now because things are still under preparation, but even as to say, as those languages are being introduced, we are happy about it. Do we have sufficient means for them? Are we not? Because I think we need to treat very carefully when it comes to this issue of languages, but may it cannot be the discussion for this year. It can be another presentation, Jefferson, that we'd love the department to come back to us as to say, when they say each and every public school will be offering these languages, what are they for, what is the plan, what is the that we want to achieve? Let us not any hope of something that we haven't unpacked and seen, because at the end we don't want to see our African languages being even killed more by what is being introduced, but there's so much that we need to discuss when it comes to that. Chairperson, this is the third one. Yes. To the plan for the introduction of African languages. Yes. So it's the last one now, Chairperson. Let me be careful which one. Okay. Chairperson, the last one will be on this issue that is highly debated of the department vis-a-vis the publishers and the central catalogue that has been issued by the Department of Education. You know, it's a noisy person as we go around, the publishers are phoning it and everyone, you know, the department is taking away our bread, that is where we've been living. But for me, yes, again, we know that the core of the Department of Education is not to publish books, but to teach. But again, I think we're all seated here, I'm not in the department, for saving a lot through the books that are credible and that have been validated as being so. But then the catalogue, because I think the whole issue, Jefferson, it is around the books that gets into that catalogue. How are they being chosen? You know, the pool of those publishers in that catalogue. And again, vis-a-vis what's being produced by the department, there's so much that is not unclear there. And I'm telling you, those publishers are making such a lot of noise, but then we understand that they're in market, they need to leave, of which sometimes we need to balance it to say we cannot think of their stomach at the expense of a child, because for them to produce a book that is 400 rand, which can be 20 rand, again, we have to think for value for money, because we always sit here and cry out for value for money. But how are you trading in that case? Because it's quite a problem and it raises so many challenges going out there when it comes to the issue of book venture.
Thank you for that. Now the department will be able to answer my question in this meeting, in this meeting. Because I don't think we are going to check, we'll be able to check it in the annual report of next year. That's not been yet, but I don't think the people that will be coming in will be able to oversight it. When it comes, because you speak here about city base and what was in the papers, etc., could you budget how much money was given out? The question is there, that was like free of charge. When you had to, you came out to refute it, getting PLDs, doing all the different things, because that is not part of your budget, and to me, that will be unauthorized expenditure. Thank you. It's unauthorized. But we must know. Could be it's not wasteful or fruitless. Because some work was done, but it is not authorized within their budget to do it. So we need to know how much it is, so that the papers also know this is the amount that was spent that could have gone somewhere else. Thank you.
Because they have walking out and they talk to the
Let me try to quickly run through the easy ones. The difficult ones will be answered by Mr. Subban and Mrs. Manon. The city bank, remember I said, Honorable Chair, or let me start by saying, thank you very much for the questions and the comments, the insightful as always. The city press issue, the ombudsman got DBE and city press together. And what usually happens is that if the media acknowledges that they did not present the correct record, out of their own means they would correct the record. That's why usually it would appear in page 6 or so and so and so on. Usually it doesn't. Sometimes it does. If it happens, then you're very lucky. But the issue is that that's what happened here. The department didn't, according to the spokesperson, the information that I received from the spokesperson, the department didn't have to pay for anything because the article was published without including information that the department made available, by the way, to the journalists. And out of their own volition, they chose to publish the article without including the information that was given by the department.
Understand me, because what you're going to take time, you have to investigate, you have to respond. Because if you don't have everything, because you brought this to us, and you make copies. So, what comes the cost, please, because that does not cost to me. You can't say there's no cost involved. Because when it comes to, we worked out in Parliament for one school day in South Africa to have all schools open at 900, you know, to have him open, teach, etc., it comes out to 900 million rand. That's what we worked out. So, yes, time was taken. You have to investigate. You have to respond. You have to make copies. You have to do this. You have to do that. That we can add it in because that is going to be unauthorized expenditure. Because you report to us if people are absent with your annual report. So many days absent, so much money. Thank you.
I got your point, Shepherd, and we'll try and work out the cost of that. The issue of publishers vis-a-vis the department. Well, I'm sure this one requires another Monkey Valley. Monkey Valley a day or two. We are convinced at the department that the route that we are taking is the right one. We are expected to provide quality education. Quality text is central to providing quality education and doing that through full coverage of textbooks. With the current arrangement, it's going to take years for this country to do it. We might not even reach that point. And we are of the view that the international experience is behind us. There are countries who are doing it in Africa, there are countries who are doing it in other continents, and it has proven to be very successful. There will always be a role for publishers. Publishers also provide these books for booksellers. We're talking about a core textbook. Supplementary textbooks will always be purchased from booksellers, and booksellers get them from publishers. And I just thought I must just make that comment there, Shepherd. But this is the position of the department. We believe we are doing the right thing. Government is fully behind it. We believe it can be done. The department, vis-a-vis the media, that is the Honorable Gina, regarding some of the information that we're putting out there, I think we are increasingly finding one another. I must acknowledge that one of our witnesses is in our inability to communicate the information that we have successfully, which is an issue that has been also identified by this committee, that our communication is not up to speed. We acknowledge that sometimes the way we put out information in the media lead to wrong interpretation because of our inability to communicate effectively. That shortcoming we acknowledge and will keep on improving on it. The introduction of IOL, incremental introduction of African languages, I think we'll have a session on that one to come and share information with the committee on what is happening, what is our plan for next year. So that will be done. A system, independent system, yes,
Honorable Kina, you are spot on. One of the concluding points, we said we need an independent electronic monitoring system which will hook into systems that are used by schools. Right in Pretoria, just by the click of the button, to be able to check which schools have started ordering, what kind of titles are they ordering, how far is the process, and so on. It's something that we are working on. At provincial level, we said we should have the Human Rights Commission impressed on all of us that it's a matter of must. We must have a system, an independent system, to tell us what's happening in the system in terms of procurement and delivery of books. Whose competency is it? Well, ideally, it should be the competency of PEDs. But I don't need to say this. There are so many functions that are competencies of PEDs. We've given up. From where we are sitting, we believe we've lost that fight. But in terms of concurrent functions, whose responsibility it is at this level, whose responsibility is it at that level? Whatever is a national priority, we pursue it up to the lowest level. We work with provinces. We do everything with and through provinces. But the national department tries the exercise. What do we mean by universal coverage? By universal coverage, we mean every learner having a core textbook in every subject for every grade. Every learner having a core textbook in every subject for every grade. Not all textbooks, the core textbook. Like, you know, the system that you went through, you knew that in biology you would have Ostoka. You can have boys and others and so on. Your school would say the core textbook of the school is Ostoka. With the core textbook, we mean that. Parents will be free. The school will be free through its library and other means to buy supplementary textbooks to the core textbook. That's the point that we are making.
Honorable Gonshan, I agree with you that the delivery of textbook is a huge enterprise. I've heard people trying to compare delivery of textbook with delivery of alcohol beverages. It blew my mind because it's a much more complicated process than that. You can't even compare it to the delivery of Coca-Cola. It's much more complex, you all know. It is indeed a huge enterprise. Principals will always have a role to play. But for us to have universal coverage of quality text, we need to bargain around getting full benefits of buying on economies of scale. And how do you do that? You centralize procurement so that you have the power to even negotiate for reduced prices. If you do it individually as a school, you don't have the leverage to get those benefits. And that's the sole reason why we're doing it. Quality text, but every learner must have a core textbook. Elimination of the third party, that's exactly what we... Money is wasted between these subsidiaries and arrangements and so on. Now, of the view, for instance, in Limpopo, last year, no, for this year, we bought stationaries direct from the manufacturer. You don't want to know how much we saved. More than 150 million rands in stationaries only, direct from the manufacturer, instead of buying it from the third party. And this is some of the news that is not newsworthy in this country. What is newsworthy is other things other than this. Involvement of EduSolution, to the rest of my knowledge, they are still involved in, they've got a contract in Mpumalanga. I'm not sure about KZN still, and Gauteng. Yeah, Gauteng had to extend, extended. Yeah, I think Gauteng as well. Apart from that, they are not involved anyway. Honorable Kanya, I appreciate, he's not here. The wisdom that you shared. We will really try to improve the way we communicate the information that we have. And your advice, I've learned that in the multitude of councils there is safety. We will listen to the victim, which is the learner in this case, the main beneficiary in the system. I'm the first one to acknowledge the minister will do the same, the DG will do the same. We don't have universal coverage at the moment. Go out to schools, you'll find learners who are still sharing textbooks. It is there, as a matter of fact. And that's why we said the aim of CEM is that come 2014, we must have universal coverage. And then Honorable Lovemore had a lot. Being the capacity of the state, I think Honorable Lovemore, we must agree to differ, but as I said, with respect, we believe that the onus to provide quality text remains the responsibility of DBE, PEDs. DBE develops the catalogue, provides leadership and support, and even monitor what provinces are doing. At the moment, both PEDs and DBE are of the view that we can provide quality text on a universal level by taking that response. It's not our core response. You're absolutely right. It's not our core responsibility. We're doing it because we believe that we have to make sure that we have enough text, even for our libraries, providing more for our library corners, etc. and etc. But you are right, it's not a core responsibility. But remember that some of these people who write for this public are our teachers, are our specialists. Some of them have been even been recruited from us for full-time jobs. They come from education. Some continue to do it. They come from my aunt. They do that work. More warm bodies. Yes, Honorable Lovemore, we are woefully cautious of not inflating the bureaucracy. But remember, our mandate at DBE is policy development, monitoring, and support. The warm bodies are intended to strengthen our responsibility to make sure that our presence is felt. We've been not that strong in terms of monitoring what is happening on the ground. And engagements with you have shown that in some of the areas we are lacking. And we are saying we want to strengthen those areas. We want to have people on the ground who will monitor and give feedback quickly so that we are able to respond to questions that you pose in Parliament, questions that you raise in meetings of the nature, and have accurate data that can be provided on the spot. We are not taking over any function of the PEDs. We are strengthening what PEDs are doing. Well, you are right again. The set of 78 and 80 is great, 6 mathematics and languages. But I also said, in terms of the SubMed results of 2007, I think mathematics was 36%, physical science, if I'm not mistaken, was about 30%, and the overall coverage, I think, was 45%, which I referred to. At the moment, apart from the survey that was conducted in 2011, you are right, we don't have readily available data to tell us exactly what is the level of coverage. It's for that reason that we're linking it to CAPS-aligned delivery of textbooks. And say, with the CAPS-aligned, we want universal coverage. And I'm sure we're going to work very hard. When we come next time, we should give something close to what you will appreciate in terms of what is obtaining in the system. She's the acting director for LTSM, Kulula. She's listening, so I'm committing her. Well, I won't comment about what the report that we presented to the Human Rights Commission. Safe to say that it's nothing different from what we reported to this committee about and to other committees. Commitments that we make, we get concurrence at various levels of the system, and usually commitments of this nature are commitments of the sector, not of DBE, of the sector, which means DBE plus the 9 provinces. It's for that reason that the minister is engaging the Minister of Finance to get money to support provinces. So these commitments have been made at the Council of Education Ministers. Well, whether by the end of 2014, beginning of 2014, the fact is by 2014. The Council of Education Minister said there must be universal coverage. Honorable Maluleka, are schools making learners to pay? I suspect they do. The last time I checked, that was the occurrence. And you have reminded us that we have to go back and find out as to what is happening to this money that they collect for these books. As we come up with the policies and issue that we need to pick up as well, that if learners are made to pay, where is that money going to?
Honorable Moni, as always, I appreciate your comments, as it would be with all honorable members. Honorable Chairperson, we will go and work out the course of the activities that led to this fruitless exercise. In a way, fruitless, because if you had to do something that is done already, then we'll come back to you with that information. Otherwise, thank you very much. Just before I conclude, for your record, Chairperson, the information at my disposal indicates that the presentation for the teacher branch was forwarded yesterday at 2:53 p.m., sent to the secretary. It was sent to Mr. Mahara at 2:53 and sent to the secretary at 15:13. The presentation that earlier on we said it was not received. I'm just saying the record indicates, and I'm sure you can take it forward. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Don't tell us the record indicates, because I know we received your report. You may not point them as your report. But the other report, when my content advisor and my researcher says the report was not there, they scan it through it now. That means it was not received, the other one. And yesterday is too late, because we are not here yesterday. The latest is like Thursday, you know, to give to the members. Or don't send a hard copy, send the email. Then the email will go to members. Let us not conclude on a bad note by you defending yourself. I must commend the department on the model you are using now with the tracking, because it's important to have these PODs. But when it comes to shortages of books, you always have it, because you don't admit when it comes to admission. It could be the principal confused of what was ordered, etc. And we are happy that you have a draft policy on retention and retrieval of books. We are happy to say that you are acknowledging that your cost driver is the learners. Because the learners will tell you how many schools you have, how many teachers we have in place, how many textbooks, how much everything. And I must say, because here, the previous chairperson had a hearing on access to quality education. And whether then a person had to ask yourself the question, is the infrastructure, the sanitation, the water, then the core function of the department? But they say it's part of quality education. LTXM, whether it comes from publishers or departments, that also leads to quality education. Teachers, even the other things like your remedial teachers, your psychologists, your occupational therapists, there's quite a number of things, libraries, all that, that makes up access to quality education. And I think it's important that when we speak, that we should keep these things in mind. I'm not so sure about multivalue, whether we're going to have a repeat, but we'll discuss it. Because I think it can be something very important to help the people that's coming in the next. Yes, we'll still be seeing you again to your budget. And we still got the annual report that we have to do. So we'll look at that. And listen, Mr. Mawele, you're not listening. You are speaking here. Even though I'm looking at you, thank you. And then even giving us these PODs, these are very important. And I want to make a joke about it. Why is everyone saying color? You know, but I know it's supposed to be static copy, because it's so similar. You know, as though, you know, that you just did it now for us. That you can see, but it's not the truth. Because you can see there are differences when it comes to the signatures. Yes, but I want to see the AG now before you leave, when you leave. But I'd like to thank you for these deliberations. But there are things that you have to come back to us for. because you know you're giving us timelines. And we are going to check the timelines. And you know what I always say that I felt happy about was, you know, when it came to the Eastern Cape. When the papers like the Herald, you know, everyone that criticized the Eastern Cape says, it was the first time in the Eastern Cape that books were delivered before the school closed. So I think that is an achievement for the department. And we know that there's a concurrent function. But I don't think the concurrent function should hinder you. We give the provinces a equitable share. Now who monitors that? Who monitors the implementation of the policies of national? So let us not blame concurrent. But as we go along, let us see how can we cooperate with each other, because when it comes to the Intergovernmental Relationship Framework Act, that tells you how do a department, because at the moment, the coordinating committee, only the presidential coordinating committee going down, the right premier going down to local government, but each department is supposed to have such a coordinating committee in place if you read your Intergovernmental Relationship Framework Act. And I'd like to say, don't play with the chairperson. I got public administration. Thank you.
Thank you.